Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on this Monday afternoon. The war is raging. Fully World War III with European nations getting involved. No sign of slowdown anywhere. The 82nd Airborne being prepared for deployment. And Iran seemingly ready to accept the invasion. It's getting crazy. It's been crazy this whole time. It's really only getting crazier and only getting worse for Israel and America. Will we be able to pull the ripcord and stop the spiral before it becomes irrevocable, before the damage becomes too great for the world to sustain? Or will we drive ever towards the abyss for no particular reason? Because there's absolutely no possibility that this gets any better for us into the future. I'll explain it all, what's happened over the weekend, where we're going from here, how the mixed messaging from both the Trump administration and Israel is really exposing the actual facts underneath the deception, which is that this has been a complete disaster. I think the response from Iran has been completely unexpected, which is not possible, I don't think. We'll get into it. But I knew what the Iranians' response would be. I knew how powerful their missile batteries would be. You're telling me the heads of the Pentagon didn't? I don't believe that. So unexpected might not be the right word, but we'll get into all of it. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Monday, the 9th of March, 2026. Trump furious at Israel over massive attacks on Iranian oil infrastructure. President Donald Trump is reportedly furious at Israel for unilateral attacks on Iran's oil infrastructure. A planned summit between the U.S. and Israel is said to have been scrapped as the first major disagreement breaks out between the two nations. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner were due to meet Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem on Tuesday. The Daily Mail reports 30 Iranian fuel depots were obliterated over the weekend with apocalyptic images showing fire leaping into the sky, huge columns of smoke, and black oily rain falling from the sky. We've seen a lot of dystopian and apocalyptic imagery over the last couple years when it comes to Ukraine or the war in Gaza. But the videos out of Iran with the entire sky turning black, raining oil from the clouds, streets literally on fire as the sewers fill up with oil and it gets ignited, apocalyptic, doesn't even begin to describe it. We'll show you images and tell you about the fallout later, both literal and figurative. Meanwhile, Trump declares that the Iran war can only end if Netanyahu is okay with it ending. So now we're doubling down on not only did Iran get us in this war, we're stuck in it until they say otherwise. At this point, it's so outrageous, I'm actually entertaining that this is all a ruse. Because it's hard for me. It's hard for my brain to accept that the President of the United States is literally out here saying, we are going to keep fighting this losing war. We are going to keep driving the world economy towards absolute collapse unless this foreign president says it's okay. At this point, seeing the bombing that happened in Tel Aviv, is Donald Trump kind of screwing Benjamin Netanyahu over? I think the people of Israel really want the war to end really fast. I think they really are not happy with the way things are going. And it almost seems to me like Trump is going, I'd love to end it, but your president Netanyahu, it's up to him. So I guess it keeps going. I don't know if that's the case. It's just I'm trying to make sense of something that doesn't make any sense, that is bonkers might be a word to describe it. I don't get it. We'll explain it all. But yeah, Trump is saying, yeah, sorry, we got to make the decision together. It's a mutual decision, leaving this war. Conscientious objector group says their phone is ringing off the hook as a huge mobilization is underway. An 8-year-old nonprofit that advises conscientious objectors, you know, people who are supposed to go fight the war, but saying this is not what I signed up for, I'm not doing it, are saying they're phones are ringing off the hook, the highest demand they've ever had for people furious that their oath to America is being betrayed and they're being sent to fight a pointless war for Israel. It's no wonder why. 7th U.S. service member dies in Operation Epic Fury. And I have the sneaking suspicion that this number is massively undercounted. I'll explain why on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big Panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I said last week we were in uncharted waters, uncharted territory. Well, we are far, far beyond the bounds of where the charts have reached. We are fully out of the dimension we're used to at this point. Lindsey Graham, of all people, is calling on Israel to calm down. Do you realize what that means? Do you realize the situation that we are in? It is something to behold. Now, taking you just a bird's eye view and looking at this holistically, comprehensively, because I've been in it. I've been glued to every development, every minute for the last week and a half now. My nerves are frayed, but you got to do it. You got to try to see everything if you want to figure out anything. If you want to get any semblance of a grip on what's actually going on, there's a lot of trash to sift through. But I think at the end of the day, my thoughts about what's happening at this moment is that Donald Trump made not just a mistake, but perhaps the biggest mistake in the history of mankind. I genuinely believe that he thought it would be easy. He thought it would be 48 hours, 72 hours at the most, and then he'd be coming out and giving another victory speech, like he did after Venezuela. That obviously didn't happen. Now, the latest it's being reported is that the Pentagon and the war planners were surprised at the strength of Iran's resistance and the, ability they have to continue shooting rockets day after day. I don't believe that. I just don't believe that because we knew it. Somehow we knew what Iran is capable of. We knew how they had planned multi-layers down, how to carry on a resistance for a long... How did we know when they didn't? I don't think that's possible that they didn't know. There is speculation that the decision was basically confirmed, not necessarily made by, but informed by AI. And that the AI model they were using was actually deliberately biased by feeding in the Venezuela operation. Like, they showed the Venezuela operation and said to the AI, we did this in Venezuela. Couldn't we do this in Iran? And the AI, being programmed to, in general, be biased in favor of the question being asked, said, yeah, you can do it. No, it'll go just the same. It'll be a repeat, one-to-one. Go ahead, pull the trigger. And then they did. I don't know if that's true or not, but it might go some way to explain why they can't even justify why they thought this wouldn't go the way that it has gone. They're not out here going, well, we thought that they had these many missiles, but we didn't know that they had these missiles. And it's like they don't even know. And it's almost like all the reasoning is happening behind the screen, behind the curtain of AI. We don't know if that's true, but it's interesting. And certainly Israel is ramping things up continuously in ways that we don't expect, aren't anticipating, and don't want them to do. I'll explain all of that. But let me just give you a timeline of what's happened since last Friday. It's Monday today. I've been gone all weekend. Let me catch you up. So on the 6th, on Friday, U.S. and Israeli airstrikes intensified on Iranian targets, including heavy bombing campaigns, joint strikes targeting multiple sites with Iran, with reports of significant escalation in attacks on military infrastructure. Iranian retaliatory missiles and drone strikes continued against U.S. allies in the Gulf and Israel. President Trump signaled a prolonged campaign, stating the U.S. could sustain operations for weeks or longer. The next day, joint U.S.-Israeli airstrikes again hit several large Iranian oil depots, fuel storage facilities, and refineries near Tehran. Massive fires erupted with thick black smoke and reports of oily rain fallout. Israel targeted regime infrastructure in central Iran. Iran expanded its target list to include U.S. economic assets. Retaliatory strikes hit the Gulf sites, including the Bahrain desalination plant being damaged, Kuwait Social Security being struck. Two people killed in Kuwait during that. Trump blamed Iran for civilian incidents, that is, things like the Manab school strike, and reiterated demands for unconditional surrender, warning of harder hits ahead. Iran rejected capitulation. There's really only one way for us to hit harder, and that would be nuclear weapons. There are B-52 nuclear-armed bombing planes that have now been moved to airfields in the UK, which would be their staging area if they were to launch a bombing raid against Iran. And again, this is the question. Are the Israeli and American leadership so committed to their apocalyptic death cult, or so embarrassed by being shown up by these people they've, you know, criticized and demonized for so long? Will they go so far as to use a nuclear weapon? And if not, what is the other option? Boots on the ground? Because that might even be worse. So they're a little bit screwed here. B-52s arrived at UK base as air campaign over Iran grinds on. Ongoing bombardment of Tehran on the 8th. And guys, let's go to some of the videos that I just put in the B-roll of the black skies, because if you haven't seen this, it is insane. And as I'm reading, just go to some of the B-roll of that came out over this weekend, because it is awe-inspiring in the worst possible way. This, I believe, is the Haifa oil plant. But yeah, there were retaliatory strikes. So on March 8th, ongoing bombardment of Tehran and other Iranian cities by U.S.-Israeli forces with strikes on military decision-making sites. Iran launched ballistic missile barrages at Israel with a lower rate than initial days, but persistent, including cluster munitions near Tel Aviv, causing injuries. Hezbollah continued rocket and drone attacks on northern and central Israel. Israel responded with strikes in Lebanon. Majtaba Khamenei, the son of the slain Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, named Iran's new Supreme Leader by the Assembly of Experts. We'll get to who that guy is in just a second. Yes, and Hezbollah, as we told you last week with Lebanon John, is not only completely, you know, disabled. They are actually winning significant battles against Israel as we speak, and Israel seems powerless to stop them. So just remember, keep tuned in InfoWars. We're the only ones that told you this. We continue to be the only ones that have an accurate view of what's actually going on there, and we have for years. I feel like I need to make a bigger deal out of that, even though I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or brag or anything. I feel like people need to know who was right the whole time, and it was us. On March 9th, this is today, Iran fired its first missiles towards Israel since Majtaba Khamenei's appointment, triggering sirens in Tel Aviv and central Israel. Hezbollah rockets reached central Israel for the first time in the current escalation. The IDF struck the launcher shortly after and targeted Hezbollah's Nasser unit head in southern Lebanon. Explosions reported in Beirut's southern suburbs amid renewed Israel-Hezbollah clashes, including Israeli forces landing in eastern Lebanon. Israel announced strikes on regime infrastructure in central Iran and Hezbollah command centers and weapons in Beirut. Hezbollah pledged allegiance to the new Supreme Leader Majtaba Khamenei. Thousands gathered in Tehran to pledge support. Iran claimed injuries to Majtaba Khamenei from earlier war strikes. So they have chosen a new leader. He is the son of the slain leader, probably with a mission of vengeance in his heart. So well done, Trump. You've replaced one elderly, graying leader who was actually a comparative moderate with his radicalized son, who has not only seen his father killed by the current American regime, but his mother and his sisters and his daughter and like everybody in his family. I'll give you the full list in just a second. So this was, in my opinion, a dumb thing to do and strategically dumb. It was all this was very dumb, and I wish we hadn't done it, but nobody listens to me. So here we are, World War III. This is what's happening. There's also just absolutely massive, clip number 12 here, huge crowd in Tehran to commemorate the choosing of the new Supreme Leader and to show solidarity in the face of the foreign states. And just look at that crowd. So Again, we're told that the Iranian people are begging for freedom. The scenes on the ground in Iran say exactly the opposite story. And I just am, in a way, a little bit jealous. I wish we had a political figure that could get out crowds like that. We did. We used to. His name was Trump. We don't know where he went. He's gone now. Donald Trump is not happy with Iran's choice for its new supreme leader. Mojtaba Khamenei, the 56-year-old son of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the former leader who was killed in the first Israeli strikes of the war. Oil prices over the weekend have jumped by 20% in a single day. Fears grow of protracted conflict in the Middle East. Iran has mocked the U.S. over that consequence of the war, branding its campaign Operation Epic Mistake. After criticism of the U.K.'s response to the war, RAF Typhoon jets have shot down and intercepted drones heading towards Jordan and Bahrain, the defense ministry said for U.K., and France is getting involved as well. In a further test for NATO, Turkey said alliance defenses shot down another ballistic missile in its airspace. It was the second intercepted missile from Iran in a week, although, again, Iran says they have not attacked Turkey at all. They also reject blame for attacks in Saudi Arabia and other places. And Saudi Arabia seems to be taking their word for it. I'll show you a video in just a second of a Saudi minister thanking the, I believe it was the Pakistani minister, saying, you know, without your warning that Israel was about to attack us, we would have thought this was Iran. But because they actually warned them before it happened, they were able to, you know, find out who really committed the attack. So, again, the word is, the rumor is that basically 24 hours after the attack started, Trump asked for a ceasefire and Iran rejected him. Then there was rumor that it happened a few days later, following some majorly successful hits by Iran on America, American forces there in the region. Now they're refusing again. Iran is refusing overtures from Israel until from the U.S. until Israel, quote, retreats and completely collapses. This is from a senior Iranian political official saying Trump is seeking through intermediaries to connect us and Washington to the end to end the war. But at the same time, he claims the opposite. Trump states in interviews with American media that there is no specific timeline for ending the war, which contradicts the message he's sending to us. The American contradiction reflects a state of chaos and deep crisis that Trump is going through, where he has found himself in a major predicament without possessing a clear path out of this quagmire. Tehran has firmly informed the intermediaries that it is not receiving any messages from the American side and will not respond to it. Iran has a firm and resolute stance with strategic objectives, which is not to respond to any initiative until the Zionist entity retreats and completely collapses after all the crimes it has committed in the region and the chaos it has caused in the world. So it doesn't sound like they're wanting to negotiate. And if you put yourself in their position, you can understand why. They have been through this cycle a few times at this point. And they want an absolute and permanent change. And it's interesting because this is almost word for word exactly what I said in response to Hamas's attack on Israel in October 7th, 2023. That back then, again, they were stuck in a cycle of mowing the lawn, as Israel puts it. Israel going in, bombing the hell out of Gaza, letting them rebuild for a little while until they get strong enough that they're a threat, and then mow the grass again, bomb the hell out of them again. They staged October 7th as an inflection point, saying this is intolerable. We cannot continue in this cycle. We have to break out of it. Now, it's been 2.5 years, but it seems as though the inevitable result of that spark has now come to fruition. And you have Iran, who, again, has been through this before and has at this point done a lot of damage, really embarrassed and impoverished a lot of its neighbors. It's in it now, just like we're in it. It's ride the tiger time. It is, we are on top of the tiger. The only thing to do is ride it and keep it going forward. You can't stop, you can't get off, can't slow down, you die. So that's where we're at. And Iran has been deliberately incentivized by us to take this path. We have proven time and time again that negotiations are just a ruse so that we can kill them. Why would they negotiate with us? We have showed them time and time again that we are not a trustworthy partner in negotiations, that we cannot be relied upon to honor our commitments. We have put them in a position where their only option is to destroy us militarily, pretty much. Get to a point to where they don't have to rely on our goodwill anymore. If they were to accept an agreement now, accept a ceasefire now, what would it mean? Basically nothing. Look how the ceasefire in Lebanon has turned out. Look how the ceasefire in Gaza has gone for the people of Gaza. Israelis violated with impunity. Why would Iran want to make sign a ceasefire right now when we still have the ability to attack them? Because we have shown a willingness to violate agreements, because we have shown a willingness to turn a blind eye to violations of ceasefires, Iran's only option now is not to get us to a point that we're willing to negotiate. It's get us to a point where we cannot strike them if we want to. Again, that's our fault that they're in that position, but strategically, that's the only play that makes sense. They are going to keep going until they feel like we've had enough. And this was obvious from the beginning. When you push somebody into this corner, this is going to be the way that they react. The Azerbaijan president congratulates Iran's new supreme leader despite suspected drone attacks. Once again, I extend my condolences to you on the tragic passing of your father. So again, Iran is not isolated from its allies. It's not being ripped apart by internal factionalism and conflict. It, in fact, has been forced again over decades of systematic isolation by Israel and America. It is now fully self-sufficient. Now we're attempting to bomb some of the source of that self-sufficiency, but they have it pretty good. They have it pretty good with everything internal, all their production, including their medicine production. You know, it's interesting. Iran doesn't have to rely on China for its medicine. It actually is able to produce it internally. I just want you to think about that for a little while. Israeli forces destroy Hezbollah rocket launcher amid southern Lebanon military operation. We're going to get into what's going on with Hezbollah also, because that is a massively underreported story when it comes to America, the American coverage. But that's nothing new. This is something we've been making up for their lack of coverage for quite a while. I just wish somebody in any position of power would listen to us for once. Other countries are getting involved. We just heard that the UK is helping to shoot down drones and missiles with their jets. Clip number 7 here. French President Macron announces a major military buildup in the Middle East. Let's go to clip number 7 now.
La présence française.
He says we'll be deployed from the eastern Mediterranean to the Red Sea and precisely off the coast of Hormuz. We'll mobilize 8 frigates, 2 amphibi helicopter and our aircraft carrier. It also enables us to mobilize and attract contributions from several other European countries. And I'd like to salute those who followed our Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier from Atlantic to the Mediterranean. Several of our European colleagues have decided to continue supporting us. This mobilization of our Navy is unprecedented. Of course, we are also mobilizing our air and ground forces in the region. Now, this is interesting because France actually has a long-term, you know, historical relationship with Lebanon. They took over the Levant. They, you know, have a ton of interest in there. And so he is not talking about joining the war against Iran to destroy, you know, the mullahs. He's talking about de-escalation, and he's actually put out statements condemning what's going on in Lebanon and asking Israel to chill out a little bit, I think, in other terms, but that was the message. The new supreme leader of Mojtaba Khamenei, supreme leader of Iran, shows the folly of Trump's Iran war, essentially pointing out that Iranians have more intense personal reasons to loathe America and resist any surrender or compromise. Few Iranians have more of a reason than Mojtaba Khamenei, who's been named the Islamic Republic's new supreme leader. The opening airstrikes of this war on February 28th killed not only Mr. Khamenei's father and predecessor, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, but also his mother, Mansoureh, his wife, Zahra, and probably one of his children. Having assumed the leadership in personally tragic circumstances, it seems unlikely that Mr. Khamenei will be prepared to do America's bidding or retreat in any way. Donald Trump described Mr. Khamenei last week as unacceptable to me, adding, quote, "We want somebody that will bring harmony and peace to Iran." Instead, Iran's Assembly of Experts, a group of senior clerics charged with selecting the supreme leader, sent a message of defiance by choosing the supposedly unacceptable candidate. Now, there's an interesting twist to this as well, which is that Israel supposedly killed the Iranian leaders we were hoping to work with in the same airstrike that killed Khamenei. And this may have been a miscommunication from Israel, or Israel screwing up Trump's plan to kill the current leadership. And he may have been in discussions with the second, you know, class people to say, okay, you kill our leadership, then we'll come in charge and we'll settle things down. But then Israel killed those people. And so now it's only the hardline extremists that are left, which was the purpose all along, if you want my opinion. Iran's new supreme leader is wounded. He sustained a mystery injury. I don't know if it's that much of a mystery. Gee, how did he get hurt? Maybe it has to do with the saturation carpet bombing campaigns on the capital city, perhaps. But yeah, so the person that we, because of us, is now in charge of Iran, a young man at 56. He could be in there for 40 years if his health is good and if he doesn't go above ground too much. Who last week lost his father, his mother, his wife, and his son in a single attack. And that's on top of the other family members he's already lost in the combat with Iran over a little while. So you just put somebody in charge who guarantees that Iran takes this to the end, to the absolute end. Which again, well, what is it? What's the best possible outcome for America? So far, our actual plan, the Israeli / American stated goal, is to literally create a failed state in Iran, to simply destroy the ability of them to have a civilization, the basic civil infrastructure of hospitals and police departments being systematically eradicated. So what? They just have to die or flee to Europe? Insane doesn't even begin to describe it. Calling the decision to go to war with Iran, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic or exaggerating too much when I say it may have been the worst decision in the history of the world. The worst. I cannot think of a worse one. I'm racking my mind. I know a lot about history. I can't think of a worse decision than the one that was made. Because like usually something, a catastrophe of this magnitude requires a whole plethora of decisions. You need bad decision after bad decision. This seems like it was one bad decision made by Donald Trump one day on bad information or for bad reasons that, if nothing dramatic changes, and there's no sign that it will, is going to destroy the world economy in a way that I don't think we're prepared for, going to massively and probably permanently weaken America. I was talking about this on the gray area with Rex and Tim yesterday. I don't think it was his plan, but in a weird sort of way, Trump is fulfilling the QAnon promise. Like Tel Aviv is being smashed to smithereens. The Israelis are not doing well. If you wanted to hurt Israel, then you would do exactly what Trump has done over the last week. And if you wanted America to get out of the Middle East, I think we might have to get out of the Middle East now. I think out of necessity, it's going to be real hard for us to even be in the Middle East at the end of this. Why would Iran allow it? And what ability do we have to force Iran to allow it? We may be out of the Middle East and Israel may be, you know, severely damaged to the point that they're not able to wage their, you know, wars of aggression for the next couple decades. Like, I don't think it was on purpose, but I do think the consequences of this, as negative as they are in the short term, in the long term, I think this is Iran flipping over the board and we're going to get to play a whole new game. That's not what the Americans are saying. I'll tell you what they say on the other side.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. It's one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it, because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalists. And the AlexShowsTour.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Bigley. The backup Alex Shows Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, TheAlexShowsTour.com can keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexShowsTour.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexShowsTour.com, because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win-win. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win, or a non-zero-sum game, or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue, or our Bovine Colostrum, or our CMOS, or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers. And with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything on TheAlexShowsTour.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAlexShowsTour.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene Blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Video is still going out. There's the video we were looking for. There it was. It came back. That's what we were trying to start the segment with. The burning of another ball statue in Iran, with the, you know, Masonic symbols being burned there. A statue of Baal was also burned in front of the American embassy in Mexico City as an act of protest against the war of choice by the Epstein class here in America against Iran for, you know, literally nothing. I want to maybe do a little compare and contrast here. Let's go to clip number 9 here. This is Pete Hegseth being asked about limitations on America's involvement, including boots on the ground. Now, this has gone from being a campaign promise that even considering such a thing as boots on the ground in Iran is ridiculous and unapproachable and would never happen. And then it became, well, we are going to war with Iran, but boots on the ground we're ruling out too. You know, we're not ruling anything out. And the 82nd Airborne is canceling major exercises they were going to do. And it looks like they may very well be preparing for deployment themselves. Here's Pete Hegseth talking about this decision-making process. Let's watch.
Is it possible to achieve the objectives President Trump has set before you if we don't locate and obtain and extract the highly enriched uranium?
There's a lot of different ways we can get after that. They've used a conventional umbrella of missiles that was growing every single day, their production capacity, to try to cover over their nuclear blackmail ambitions. As far as how you get at that nuclear option, we'll make sure that their nuclear ambitions are never achieved.
Will we take it out ourselves?
Well, I would never tell you or anybody else what our options are. See, that's another thing. People keep asking.
It's a legitimate question.
It's a very fair question. People ask boots on the ground, no boots on the ground, 4 weeks, 2 weeks, 6 weeks, go in. President Trump knows, I know, you don't tell the enemy, you don't tell the press, you don't tell anybody what your limits would be on an operation. We're willing to go as far as we need to in order to be successful.
Do we have any overt or covert forces inside Iran now?
I wouldn't tell you that if we did.
Only reason I ask is earlier this week you said no. Is that still the answer?
Yeah, that's still the answer, but we reserve the right. We would be completely unwise if we did not reserve the right to take any particular option, whether it included boots on the ground or no boots on the ground.
That's so funny. He's like, I wouldn't tell you yes or no. Like, well, you said no yesterday. And he's like, okay, then no. Okay, then right. Yeah, right. Then no. We're still. I don't think this is Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump holding their cards close to their chest and not giving the enemy insight into what they're. I don't think they know. I don't think they have any idea what they're doing. They're keeping their options over because they're flailing and have no idea what to do next. And that's just the impression I get for good reason. This is a list of just 28 civilian sites in Iran that were hit by American and Israeli strikes over the weekend. In terms of schools and parks, they hit a primary school in Manab, another one there in a sports hall in Fars province, Namek school, Tehran, two were killed, an elementary school in Tehran, a children's park in Tehran, a middle school in Parinid, another elementary school in Parinid. We also destroyed these hospitals and medical facilities, the Gandhi Hospital, hospitals near the Red Crescent building, Abuzar Hospital, emergency centers, Sarab and Hamadan, at least two wounded, Bekel Hospital, a neonatal care center. Oh, a neonatal care center. That's for, you know, premature babies, newborns, infants. So, you know, bomb them, obviously. You also want to bomb the Heart Hospital and another hospital in Minab. They've also bombed multiple residential areas in Tehran, as well as other major countries, as well as historical and cultural sites, such as the Golestan Palace, the Tehran Grand Bazaar, the Bath Stadium, and the Azadi Sports Complex in Tehran. See, what this says to me is that we're losing the war. We're the bad guys, by the way. See, this isn't Hamas, where they're in Gaza in 25 square miles, and you can actually make the argument that, well, there's, you know, Hamas under every building. It was ridiculous back then when they were making it. It's way more ridiculous now when you have Iran, a country that's almost two times the size of Texas, that has gigantic military installations out in the middle of nowhere that are obviously still operational. If you haven't destroyed those yet, if the missiles are still being launched from Iran and landing in Israel, why are you bombing hospitals and schools? Why are you bombing elementary schools and parks? Because this is a war of terror. This is a war of just abject murder on all of the Iranian civilians. That's what it seems like to me. This doesn't seem like a sophisticated operation to systematically dismantle Iranian leadership to bring them to their knees. This sounds like something that will A, massively increase support for the Iranian government amongst their own people, B, massively denigrate and diminish support for America and Israel worldwide when they see what we've doing, what we've been doing. Three, is strategically retarded because we're not actually degrading any of their capabilities. We're just empowering their vengeance. Is this smart? Is this strategic? Is this just retarded flailing, or is this strategic collapse? Like, these are the only options, but it's ridiculous. And the story is from MideastEye.net. Schools, hospitals, playgrounds, Iranian civilian sites hit by U.S.-Israeli strikes. And I could go on and on about that, but I really got to tear through this. Because, by the way, I'm going to be joined by some amazing guests later in the show. I haven't even told you about it because I've been too excited to talk about this war. But we're going to be joined by Pastor Jonathan Shelley, and we're going to talk about the mistakes that the end-time evangelical Israeli extremists think is, you know, justifying this apocalyptic war. We'll also be joined by Kelsey Sheeran in the third hour. We're going to be talking about mostly about MAID and the suicide program of Canada, both for their people and as a nation as a whole. So very excited to talk about them. So I need to get through as much Iranian stuff in this first hour as possible while not touching too much on the apocalyptic death cult aspect of it. But we'll get to that in the second hour. From Washington Post, Israeli defense officials start to ask how the war will end. Oh, you've thought about that, have you? Maybe you do that before you start the war, but better late than never, right? A few senior officials in Israel are starting to voice concern about the escalating open-ended attack on Iran and suggesting possible exit ramps that might halt the war before it damages the region and the global economy. Here's the problem. Iran controls those exit ramps, and they have the gates firmly closed. So you started this. This is your fault. And suffer the consequences. Trump has wavered among several conceptions of the outcome. He spoke at first about a negotiated settlement with pliable members of the regime, but has since demanded surrender because he said his preferred negotiation partners are dead. Like Trump, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said he wants to press on to what he described Saturday as, quote, the moment of truth. The disdain for negotiations expressed by Trump and Netanyahu may deepen after Sunday's announcement that Iran's new supreme leader will be Mojtaba Khomeini, the son of the previous head of state who was killed in a massive airstrike in his compound on February 28th. The new leader is a hardliner who, if anything, is even closer to the Revolutionary Guard Corps than his father was. He's not a man for the bargaining table. Meanwhile, Trump says, I have a plan for everything. President Trump told the Post he has a plan to tackle surging oil prices caused by the war with Iran after the cost per barrel briefly neared 120, 65% higher than the pre-war price before settling above $100 Monday morning. Quote, I have a plan for everything, okay? Trump said in a brief phone interview on the 10th day of the joint U.S.-Israeli war with Iran. I have a plan for everything. You'll be very happy. I don't think you do. I don't think he does. I'm just going to say that outright because I don't believe him. I don't believe him, and I don't think he does have a plan. And I think you can tell this by not only the messaging out of the, you know, establishment media, but the change in messaging. It's not just what they're saying now. It's the fact that what they're saying now is entirely different than what they were saying a week ago. So this went from we're going to crush them, we're going to destroy them, it's going to be no problem at all, to, you know, we prepared for this. Maybe it's going to be a bit of a slog, but we're ready for that and we were prepared for that. And actually, it's going better than we even thought. We're ahead of schedule. Now they're saying something different entirely. Now the messaging has changed to allow for admission that things aren't going so well. But they have a clever phrase to couch this in. They have a clever little rhetorical trick to try to ease the realization that Americans are coming to that this thing is not in control and is actually flying off the handle. Let's go to clip 52 here. U.S. officials spotted all across the media laying out the new scripted catchphrase meant to lull you into accepting that even though things are going badly and worse than they said previously, that's fine. And they want that to happen too. So they're in charge and in control, and don't question them. Let's watch.
This is a short-term disruption for the long-term gain.
Short-term pain for the long-term gain.
Short-term pain be for long-term gain.
We're going to have some short-term pain with long-term gain.
Short-term pay for a long-term gain.
Some short-term pain, yes, but we've got some long-term gain. Short-term spike for a long-term gain.
Some short-term pain for American consumers.
We may have to deal with that in the short term.
Short-term and temporary.
Temporary short-term pain.
It's going to suck in the short term.
Some short-term pain.
Short-term pain.
We have to focus on the short-term.
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 Short-term and long-term.
Short-term.
Hopefully this is a short-term pain.
Short-term is highly outweighed of the long-term benefits.
Some short-term pain for the long-term gain.
Short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain.
Well, I'm convinced. I mean, you tell me something 20 times in a row, I just think it's true. I'm a robot like that. It's funny that you didn't say there would be any short-term pain. Do you know why they're calling it short-term pain? It's because it hasn't been that long, right? They can use this phrase for, like, I'd give it a shelf life about 2 weeks. If you're still using the term short-term pain for long-term gain after 2 weeks, you need to come up with a new phrase. They have 2 weeks to come up with a new phrase that says something like long-term pain for even longer-term gain. You know, they'll have to be more clever than that, but that'll be the meaning of it. It'll be, this has become a war for our existence. They are absolutely scrambling. Is really just, that's it. At the end of the day, that's what's happening. They are completely flailing. They have no idea what comes next. And they're trying to sell this to the American people in the most outrageous way possible. Let's go to clip 53 now. Here's U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham talking about the long-term gain that we, stand to win. Let's watch.
All of this money is to make sure they never go nuclear, they can't hit us with ballistic missiles, and they stop terrorizing the region. When this regime goes down, we're going to have a new Mideast. We're going to make a ton of money. Nobody will threaten the Straits of Hormuz again.
Wow, amazing. We're going to make so much money, guys. I mean, not us, not the American people. I mean, we're still going to be flooded with a bunch of refugees. I'm still going to have homeless encampments catching fire on the corner where I live. My elementary school is still going to be filled with so many Afghan refugees that they teach classes in Pashtun, so the American kids can't understand it. See, there's going to be no benefits for us. There has never even been suggested that there would be benefits coming to the American people. We will be spending the money. We will be spending our lives. We will be using our power, our influence, our resources. All of the gain is going to go to Israel and to Lindsey Graham and his friends at the very top of our society. Absolutely nothing is being done for the American people. And if they even wanted to pretend to have concern about the American people, then they would be helping us, not starting a war in Iran, which is going to inevitably, and already has to a certain degree, driven up all of the prices for everything. Like, every time you go to fill up your car, just remember, you're paying for Iranian war. It's like, you know, even people that are for the war, just ask them, like, okay, well, then give me $500 to wage it. Most people be like, no, I'm not giving you $500. Well, yeah, you are actually. Actually, you are going to be paying for this with every item you buy and every tank of gas you fill up and every, you know, doctor's appointment you have to miss because you don't have insurance and we don't have health care because Israel does and we have to support them. No reason to panic over Iran oil price surge. I have a plan for everything. Okay, well, what is it? I don't believe you. I don't think you have a plan, actually. I think you're lying. I actually think you're lying. And guys, I want to go to clip 47, but you can cut out the question. It's Tim Dillon asking Ryan Grimm, but I just want Ryan Grimm's response. Probably starts about a minute in. If you can cue that up, I want to go to that in just a second. But this was something that Trump did not have a plan for. Israel hitting Iran's oil refineries. They hit oil refineries that feed Tehran. Thousands of labor workers burned alive. Families burned in their homes. Toxic fumes and fire rolling over a city of 9 million. 2 days ago, they hit the burn treatment center. So even if it's still open, it cannot be operating at full capacity. They bombed the airport, so families cannot even send the burned and injured out for treatment. Burning fuel is running through rain canals like rivers of fire, scorching trees, licking the walls of houses beside it, turning ordinary streets into hell. This is the real face of the United States and Israel. And yeah, apparently we had no idea they were going to bomb the oil fields, and we were pissed that they did. And you actually have Lindsey Graham, of all people, saying that this was a bad idea. This was posted by Jonathan Shannon. They're calling it the stupidest war in America history. The blast killed Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. The reckoning, it turned out, was more complicated. The Israeli strike also killed another group of Iranian officials who had been meeting in a different part of the compound. Among them were the people the White House had identified as more willing to negotiate than their bosses, who might bring help bring a swift end to the conflict, according to American officials. So we bombed Ayatollah Khamenei under the assumption that we'd be able to shock and awe, you know, traumatize the Iranian people in a major strike, kill their leadership, and then rebuild their government with friendly people in exactly the way that we did with Venezuela. Again, this is why I think the Venezuela program was just, you know, point by point what they were trying to run again. Only the Israelis bombed the people we were hoping to work with. So when Trump says, I have a plan, this is all under control, he's lying. He's being fed lies by the Israelis, and they're making fools of him. So he did not have a plan for this extending 48, 72 hours because he was lied to about Iran's capabilities. He did not plan on this, you know, the replacement to Ayatollah Khamenei being even more hardliner. He thought he'd have an agreement with a friendly replacement, but Israel killed that friendly replacement and the people who he was willing to work with. He didn't want this to destroy the oil industry, but Iran decided to blow up the oil processing plants outside Tehran. So Trump does not have a plan of what's going on here. He is not the one deciding things. Israel is doing things that Trump has not planned for, that he does not want them to do, and then he's having to react and respond and try to deal with the problems they're causing. This is obvious. I'm just reading what people are saying. Like, this is all mainstream media news. It's just obvious what's actually happening here. Trump is completely controlled by Israel. They are manipulating him to destroy America in a major combat with Iran, the ultimate goal of all of this being that the Middle East is shattered and destroyed except for Israel. America is driven out and also massively hampered economically because Israel used America to deal with its enemies in the Middle East. Once we have dealt with the enemies in the Middle East, they no longer need us. We are now slated for destruction. This is just obvious from the beginning, and Trump is falling for it hook, line, and sinker and helping them along the way. Let's go to this video. This is Ryan Grimm being asked by Tim Dillon about sort of Trump's ability to control this situation. Let's watch.
I think Trump has been told so many times that you can't do a certain thing, and then he has done that thing, and then it has gone fantastically for him. And I think the latest one, to Jeremy's point, was Venezuela. Everything, you can't just go into the country and grab the president and his wife and take them back out and not lose a single American service member, and then just say that you run the country. That you can't do that. It's not how things are done. Yet he did that, and it from his perspective, it worked out, you know, phenomenally for him. And he has said, like, I'm on a roll. Like, let's go. Let's hit Cuba. Exactly, like, I'm feeling good. Like,
I think Venezuela was very deliberately planned as a precursor to what we're seeing in Iran now, not just to sort of bolster Iran or bolster Trump's confidence. You know, you're going to go into Iran, but also to have these arguments about, well, can Donald Trump unilaterally start a conflict if he says there's imminent threat, even though there's really not? I mean, that's what was decided during Venezuela. Well, this cocaine could kill somebody, therefore it's an imminent threat, therefore we get to use military force. This is outrageous, and this is what's led to us where we are now. Meanwhile, let me just show you, like, what we're up against. Let's go to clip 23 here. This is the Secretary of Defense for Iran. In the last interview I did on the fifth day, I said we have passed the peak and are heading downhill. Now is our downhill phase. You saw what happened just last night in Tel Aviv. Meaning, because we hit the radars and infrastructure, today truly Mr. Trump and Mr. Netanyahu are trapped in a slaughterhouse in the Persian Gulf. And in the coming days and weeks, much more joyful news will be delivered to the dear nation of Iran. Look, the big mistake they made was that they came and designed a short-term war, but they didn't realize this might turn into a long-term one. Even the greatest international powers, if they initially plan for a short-term war and halfway through it becomes a long-term war, no matter how much power they have, they will be defeated. Why? Because short-term wars have a specific design. They require limited logistics and limited preparations. A long-term war requires abundant logistics, extensive planning, and they have to anticipate many consequences. They thought the Islamic Republic would be finished in 48 hours. First, they brought one aircraft carrier, then recently they said, for precaution, let's take another ship too. But now they're saying, we must bring whatever ships we have from anywhere in this world so we can handle this. He's trying not to laugh while he's saying this. Take the USS Ford that has now come towards the Mediterranean. It's currently their time for leave. There are 5,000 or 6,000 personnel saying, we need to go on leave. So again, I mean, it's just like, because during their time in Venezuela, their mission there had ended, they were told you will go for 48 hours and come back. I mean, it's very reminiscent of Russia, where you listen to American politicians and it's all, oh, you know, it's chest beating and they're just a big gas station with nukes and we can take them on and hoorah. And you listen to the Russians and they're like, look, this is a very serious thing we're having to deal with. And they just sound reasonable and respectable and intelligent. It's like the same thing with Iran. Our leadership is just like, you can't hear our plans because they're too secret and awesome. So don't even worry about, we're going to destroy these goat herders in Iran. That's not going to be a problem. Meanwhile, Iran is just like, look, they plan to sort of be over in 48 hours. They have no containment for, they have no ability to deal with long-term warfare. I mean, it's just, it's embarrassing. Honestly, it's embarrassing. I kept making that joke during like the height of Gaza. Is even the Israelis, like the military leadership in the Mediterranean, is just like hard-nosed, like men with beards and scars on their faces, just being like, we will deal with this in time. We will not let our people be destroyed. We will have vengeance. And then like every American leader is just like, so we have tried to talk to the Iranians and they will not talk to us. So they're going to have to deal with us later. And it's just like, why is our leadership so gay? And now they're not gay. They're just retarded. Why is our leadership either gay or retarded? It seems like the Iranians and the Russians and everybody else, even the Chinese, they put their best people. And you can see what happens when that happens.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in, so you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at TheAltruistCorps.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Ladies and gentlemen, second hour of the War Room is on. I'm going to be joined very shortly by my guest, Pastor Jonathan Shelley. We're going to be talking about the end times. Are we in them? I don't think so. We'll find out how this eschatology plays into the current war, as we have currently official memos going out to the U.S. Army, U.S. military overall, saying, you know, tell your soldiers that, you know, if they're concerned about deploying to the Middle East, let them know that it's just because Jesus needs us to start the apocalypse. Okay. That'll really bolster their spirits. And the army officers are going, what are you talking about? I signed up to defend and protect America and our interests, not try to kickstart building the third temple and ushering in the Antichrist. Excuse me. And again, we need to combat this using all of the wonderful tools provided to us by our founding fathers, who explicitly wrote down that we are not supposed to have religious, you know, denominations dictating our government policy at all, let alone our military policy. So we'll discuss all of that. But I want to once again pat ourselves on the shoulder and do a little flashback here to October 2023. This was like a week after the October 7th attack. I'm happy now that so many people over 2 years have started to look into America's relationship with Israel and discovered that it is not, it's not only not mutually beneficial, it's, you know, deeply antagonistic. It's just, you'd all would have learned this years beforehand if you'd only been tuned in to InfoWars, Tomorrow's News Today. Here's me in October of 2023. Saying what a lot of people are just now beginning to understand. Let's watch. What has come about as a result of this hospital bombing? Well, massive anti-American protests, anti-Israel protests all across the Middle East, Europe, and here in America. I remind you once again that America pays for the crimes of Israel. When Israel commits crimes against innocents, it's America that receives the blame. It's you and I. It's the American people. It's our flag, our culture, our country itself receives the enmity, the ire, the hatred of millions and millions and millions of people who feel like, for very good reason, we are responsible for allowing Israel to kill civilians by the hundreds and pay no price for it. And be protected from paying a price for it by us. So I think it's time we declare independence from Israel. I think it's time that we actually be the nation we are, which is the most powerful nation in the history of the world. A nation who can achieve anything if it puts its mind to it, that can solve any problem. We still are incredibly wealthy, incredibly capable. Our people are the best in the world at basically everything that we do. There's a reason we landed on the moon first. There's a reason that our culture dominates the globe. There's a reason that our industry created everything from automobiles to personal computers. There's a reason that America is exceptional. It's our people, it's our qualities, it's our beliefs, it's our founding, it's our liberty and freedom and individuality. These things still exist, and it's time for America to use this power that we have, to use the greatness of our nation, to bring about peace and not be the lapdog of warmongering psychopaths on a blood feud revenge mission. I'm just saying, y'all, we'd been listened to early on. Israel wouldn't have made the mistake. Israel wouldn't have made the mistake of bombing the hell out of Gaza for 2 years straight. Because at this point, like, I'll admit, it's hard for me not to be happy that Tel Aviv is getting hit like it is now. Because we've had to watch for 2 years as the Israelis celebrated and mocked. Remember, they would make videos where they dress up as Palestinians and like be pretending to cry with like dead baby dolls. And it's like, you know, some of the people that made those videos are probably now trapped under rubble in Tel Aviv. Only the difference between me and my ideological enemies is that I don't celebrate the death of noncombatants. I don't get joy out of the death of people, even if they hate me. So, like, this is all just awful, and we should just do everything we possibly can to bring an end to it as soon as humanly possible, because it only gets worse from here. Just understand, it only gets worse.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big Panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a conversation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
Mantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm very happy to be joined by my guest, Pastor Jonathan Shelley. He is a pastor with seven children. He runs the Steadfast Baptist Church in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's the host of the Baptist Bias podcast. He's produced books called The Sodomite Deception and The Preserved Bible. He, of course, because of his work as a Christian pastor, has been banned from banks, social media. He's been evicted, sued, and protested. And he's not the best friends of the ADL and the enemy of my enemy, folks. BaptistBias.com is his website. You can also go to CBCKJV.com. That's SBCKJV.com. That's SBCKJV.com. Got it right that time. Thank you so much for joining us, Pastor Jonathan Shelley.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And, one other thing, the Sodomite Deception and the Baptist, the Sodomite Deception is a movie. Oh. And, I really appreciate you bringing me on the show. And, it's kind of funny. We always think of like SBCKJV as in King James Version. So the way you did that was interesting. But thanks so much for having me on the show. I'm excited about this topic. Iran and Israel is always just a hot topic, literally and obviously spiritually. So, I'm pretty excited to just discuss anything and everything we want to say.
Well, let me start off by saying typically when it comes to like discussions of the Middle East, I kind of hate when anybody references the Bible. Like I look at it just purely politically. I go, they want this. These people want this. And then I'm talking to somebody and they go, well, the prophecy says this, this, this. And it's like, look, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but I'm concerned with, what I can see, what I can feel, like how I can handle it. However, when you look into the people that are putting this war on, they clearly are motivated by a sort of end times, apocalyptic prophecy driven, cult mentality. So it's not like something you can just ignore. This is motivating people. This is having a tangible impact on what's happening on the ground. What is your view on is the term eschatology, right? Is it the study of the end times? What is your, concept of how the current conflict plays into the end times or how it's being used? What do you think the truth is?
Yeah, I can get being jaded on eschatological views because there's so many bad ones out there. And of course, the Bible says that there's many false prophets in the world. So there's obviously a lot of different opinions. But when we talk about the end times, obviously the Bible alludes to a kind of a seven-period year judgment that we would call as the end times, Daniel's 70th week. This is what a lot of people that are premillennial would subscribe to. And we're just talking about the return of Jesus Christ, essentially. Do you believe that's literally going to happen? Do you believe it's metaphorical? And of course, I believe the Bible is literal and that Jesus Christ will literally return. But the Bible tells us there's going to be events that happen before this, and that there's going to be an Antichrist, and there's going to be horrible plagues in the four horsemen of the apocalypse, essentially, which we see as the seals. I have on my website a chart that essentially outlines the book of Revelation. Again, to reveal something is to make it manifest. And so, of course, we have the book of Revelation telling us the sequence of events. Now, when that's actually going to happen, we're not sure. I'm sure a lot of people thought this might have happened with the rise of the Nazi Party and the wars in Europe and World War II, and we see all this conflict. Of course, a lot of people now speculate World War III will be this particular catalyst. And of course, you have a lot of people now trying to say like, oh, we're already in this event, or oh, this already is Armageddon, or oh, these are events are playing out right now. But if you actually read the biblical narrative, you see things like locusts coming out from hell. You see stars falling from the sky, comets, mass plagues, just total destruction. This has not happened yet. Could it happen in the near future? Maybe, but it's definitely not upon us now. It's not happening as we see it right now. With Elon Musk building Starlink, you see a global currency. You see no cash society ideas. You see Neuralink. Yeah, it looks like a lot of infrastructure is being built for this main event. But it's frustrating to hear people say it's upon us as we see it.
Right. And that's the interesting thing, because while I tend not to put too much credence in like the prophecy when it comes to geopolitical analysis, I am a Christian. I do believe in the book of Revelation. And one of the startling things about it is that there are passages in the book of Revelation that's like, how did people even understand this before the modern world? Now that we have technology reading it, it's like, okay, it sounds like the guy's describing a jet holding a bombing campaign, you know, but it's as if somebody from 1,000 years ago got a vision for 10 seconds of the modern world and went, oh my God, I have to write this down and try to figure out how to express this to people. So I do, like, I believe in prophecy. I just don't believe that like God needs our help to fulfill it or anything like that. But yeah, when you talk about the mark of the beast, I mean, these things are very much seemingly aligned. However, as a fan of history, I'm also aware of the people in the 1600s that would like commit mass suicide. They were so convinced they were in the end time. So I'm also always very like, you know, nervous about going, this is it, we're in the end times, because I know this is a common, you know, belief in humanity. They think there's no way it could get worse. And that was 500 years ago. So obviously it can always get worse. How much does the AI, the mark of the beast, the technological prerequisites have to do with why people think that these are the end times?
Yeah. Another event is like the French Revolution, and they started over with like a new calendar, and you can see all kinds of crazy events throughout history, and people kind of point to that. But obviously at some point, being a Bible believing Christian, we do believe it's going to happen. I think that COVID shots with these mass inoculations kind of set the stage to see a wide adoption of an infrastructure that's forced upon us globally. Yeah. I think with the cashless society, we see how a mark of the beast could be implemented. I think with globalization, we see how the purchasing systems, the POS systems, could be turned into this mark of the beast option, and no longer are people able to use actual cash. I think with the political instability in the United States, just crazy stuff. I mean, they almost killed Trump multiple times. We see nuclear weapons. We see mass censorship. We see mass spying. We see facial recognition technology. We see Musk saying that cars cannot flee the United States. If we were going to have a draft, he says that a Tesla cannot drive across the U.S. border. We see Starlink obviously being populated to where they're going to have a hive, and you could have technology and internet literally everywhere. A lot of these events are important because it's setting the stage, basically. And, you know, there's certain events like the two witnesses are going to lie dead in the streets, and the Bible says the whole world is going to be watching. How is that possible? It wasn't possible in the 1600s. But if you have Starlink internet where everybody with a smartphone, no matter where they are on the planet, can have a connection and see this, that could actually happen. We could actually have, with this global cashless society, a statement made, hey, you can't buy or sell unless you take the mark, and it be literally true. We can see with COVID shots being mass adopted by all these global countries, this global effort, okay, you have to go down your Walgreens and get, you know, the mark of the beast now or whatever it is. And again, of course, with the political unrest in the Middle East, that's always been happening. I don't think I've ever been, I think my entire life, there's always been political unrest in the Middle East specifically.
Right.
But when we see potentially, you know, the Dome of the Rock crumble, a new temple being built on there, I would say we're very close.
Right.
But, you know, until then, I think we just keep seeing the stage being set. Is it going to be 10 years, 50 years, 100 years? I don't know. I don't believe it's going to happen in the next 3-5 years. But, it just kind of depends. I mean, with the Republican Party being in shambles, who's going to ever win the Republican nomination ever again?
Right.
And, of course, nobody's really a Democrat. It's kind of a fake party. So, you know, politically, I have no idea what this means for America for a presidency. Obviously, Donald Trump has all this pressure from the Epstein files, and when they're starting to get released, now all of a sudden we just bomb Iran randomly. It's like that's the connection. If you're looking for a connection, it's the Epstein files. It's not, oh, this is Bible prophecy. But as a Bible believing Christian, why in the world would I try to support the Antichrist or building the temple or bringing in the apocalypse, bringing right. in death, bringing in destruction? You know, I'm not going to go and hold the bag for Judas as he puts the 30 pieces of silver in it. Like, that just doesn't really make any sense whatsoever. We understand scripture has to be fulfilled, but I don't have to be the one putting the nails in Jesus' hand on the cross. I don't have to be the Roman soldiers marching him up the hill and actually crucifying him. And that's kind of, you know, to me, the same implication of trying to help the Antichrist or going into the Middle East and trying to kickstart anything. You know, Christians should be caring about preaching the gospel and getting people saved and following God's commandments and raising their families. And, you know, that's what we should be concerned with, not trying to assist the Antichrist and the apocalypse. I mean, the Bible says to occupy till he come.
All right.
The Bible says go ye into all the world and preach the gospel of every creature. The Bible makes it clear the Great Commission is to preach the gospel and to teach all nations and to baptize them. And so, you know, it's silly that Christians are so excited about this kind of stuff. And frankly speaking, it's a mass slaughter of Christians in the end times.
Right.
Why are they so excited about that?
That is what is so weird to me, is this idea that Jesus needs our help and we have to start a nuclear conflict. Because my reading of it, just, and, you know, you just pick up the Bible and start reading. It's not really, you know, you can get deep with it, but you can just read it, and it's pretty obvious about what it's trying to tell you. And it seems to me like they're saying, like, yeah, things are going to get so bad that, like, Jesus has to come back. Like, it's kind of not a choice. You know, either the world is destroyed or Jesus has to come back. Sort of a last case scenario kind of thing. And I want to avoid that, you know, at all possible. Like, you don't want to bring that forward. That just seems absurd to me that they want to start a war for Jesus, and specifically a nuclear war, because the way that they interpret it is like Damascus has to be nuked. And I've had on, I do a show on a coast with my friend Lebanon John. He was arguing with a caller who's an evangelical who's basically going, yeah, you know, your family in Lebanon all has to be killed. They're all going to get turned to glass. And that's just what has to happen for God to work right. And it's just like, who told you this was Christian? How do you even think that this is Jesus wants you to bomb a bunch of little kids? It's nuts on the surface of it. So how do they have so many people like dedicated to this idea? I mean, it seems ridiculous, but these people would die and kill over it. How did it get to that point?
Yeah, of course, there's been a lot of lies through the teachings of Zionism and dispensationalism, and there's a demonization of Muslims more than Jews. And, you know, at the end of the day, like from a biblical perspective, the Bible teaches who is a liar, but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ, he is Antichrist. Probably the most Antichrist religion in the world is Judaism. Of course, Islam is a false religion as well. And it's not like Muslims aren't going to be headed to the same hell. But why would I want to bomb little children and women and Muslims? Like, we should be wanting to give them the gospel or leave them alone. Like, you don't have to just bomb people. You don't have to just kill people. And even if we want to just keep Israel around so that the Middle East isn't taken over by Muslims, okay, but we don't have to necessarily just bomb Iran and take over Gaza and just write blank checks to Israel and say, who do you want us to kill next? I mean, this is not Christian whatsoever. It's not in the Bible. It makes no sense. I don't see our country being blessed. You know, people say like, oh, if you bless Israel, you'll be blessed. What are we blessed with? COVID? Are we blessed with inflation? Are we blessed with, you know, feminism? Like, how is America even being blessed in the last 5, 10, 15 years? Have we been blessed with the LGBT, you know, nonsense that's going on rampant in our country? Obviously, we see our country is degrading itself. There's more degeneracy than we've ever seen before. Of course, a lot of this false teaching for Zionism caused people to be racist and genuinely hate Muslims. And of course, that's not a Christian attitude either. Obviously, we should hate the enemies of the Lord, but I do not believe every Muslim is an enemy of the Lord. And, you know, if given the chance, I would try to get them saved. You know, I have so many family members, friends, they're just like, just nuke the Middle East. Just nuke them or whatever. And it's just like such a wicked attitude. Really, yeah. The only nuke I see coming in the Bible is on Babylon, which is probably America. Honestly, the Bible teaches that all the nations of the world hate, like the 10 kings hate the whore and they hate Babylon and they send this like mighty destruction, all these arrows that basically just nuke it off of the planet. And in my estimation, that's probably America in Revelations chapter number 18 that's being described. And so, you know, at the end of the day, like I don't even think there's going to be nukes ever set off in the Middle East personally. I think it's all scare tactics and justifications for regime change and whatever the CIA is trying to accomplish over in the Middle East. Probably more about oil, probably more about the dollar, probably more about the Epstein files, probably more about whatever, you know, scams and money laundering schemes that they have going on. This isn't like how God works. God doesn't work through war efforts and money laundering and all of these criminal war crime schemes in order to accomplish his will. Like he works through truth. He works through righteousness. You know, it's insane how Christians just think we should just be mass slaughtering people in the Middle East. But look, I have it. My family, I know many Christians that believe this kind of stuff. Nuke them all and we'll sort them out later. You know, this is an ungodly attitude. It's not Christian. It's not biblical. And frankly speaking, I don't even think it's necessarily going to happen.
Well, I don't think so either. And actually, that was my next question is what is going to happen? Because if there's one thing that is a sort of persistent, like prerequisite for the end time stuff is that Israel has to be remade, right? And traditionally in like a lot of the sort of classical, more traditional Jewish sects, I mean, they hate Israel. They hate Zion because they think it was a human attempt to bring Jews back to Israel, and that in fact, when the Jews are called back to Israel, it'll be God, it'll be a divine thing, it'll be obvious to everybody what's happening. It's not up to them when to go back. I mean, this is a big division in Jewish, you know, tradition as well. But Israel existing was like a prerequisite, and it didn't exist before 1948. So any of the other, you know, end times cults before 1948, they didn't have this prerequisite fulfilled, which is a pretty big one. You know, applies to all of this. However, other times in the past where people have attempted to go back to rebuild Zion, you know, Sabbatai Zevi, right? People talk about the Sabbatean Frankists. Well, Sabbatai Zevi was leading a big Zionist march to Israel. He stopped in, you know, the Ottoman place, but there's always a disaster. There's always a big, you know, catastrophe that stops the rebuilding of the temple. So it's like if these people are trying to manipulate prophecy to their own end, it's not going to work out well for them. Like you can't trick God into this. I always get the image of like, you know, God has prophecies where things are supposed to be fulfilled. And then you've got the people like kind of forcing it, like painting a heifer red, you know, or like, you know, genetically altering them so that they make red heifers. It's like, no, he's describing a miracle, not giving you instructions on things to fulfill. It may have been a little convoluted question, but you know, the appearance.
No,
now,
I think I understand. I understand what you're saying. Ishmael is basically that attempt. Abraham was supposed to have a son. Instead of waiting for Isaac, he just forces it with Hagar and has Ishmael. And a lot of people are trying to force the end times by their own hand here, and it's not going to work. You can't force God to do anything. They tried to eliminate Jesus. Didn't work. Of course, he rose again from the dead, conquering the grave. As far as what's going to happen, the Bible talks about mass world war. The Bible talks about someone being crowned as the Antichrist and go forth to war. I do believe that the end times will probably be against Islam, and Islam will be punished for having not accepted the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so most likely it'll be an American leader that's crowned the Antichrist. He's going to march through Europe and he's going to basically decimate all of Europe with all the Muslims that have basically invaded that large section of the world. then he's going to eventually get his campaign finished in the Middle East, probably conquer all of Islam, and then he's going to declare himself God. After he's conquered Islam and declared himself God in the temple, he's going to declare everybody to get a mark in the right hand or in their forehead and to worship him as God. He's going to sit in the temple of God, declaring himself that he is God, and it's the ultimate blasphemy. The Bible teaches that someone will stab him in the right eye and he'll die, come back to life 3 days later, but it'll really be the Satan himself dwelling in his body. And at that point, there's going to be great tribulation. At that point, he is going to essentially make war with the saints, is what the Bible says. Because if you think about it, if Islam doesn't exist, if Europe has been eradicated from Islam, what conflict really is there anymore? And especially if Russia and China had sided with Islam and failed, then at that point, the world is conquered. There could be peace. But the only problem is Christians are not going to bow to the Antichrist. Christians are not going to accept. So they're basically the last enemy for the Antichrist. And there's going to be a great tribulation period where they're slaughtered in mass until Christ comes in the clouds and essentially raptures the entire saved population that still remains. And then God's going to pour out his wrath for the remaining portion of that 7 year period on the unbelievers, on the Antichrist, on his kingdom, locusts from hell, all kinds of just crazy, wrathful things are going to happen. And then you're eventually going to have your battle of Armageddon. Really, you're going to have two witnesses in Jerusalem specifically that they're probably going to blame all this on. But eventually they'll kill them. You'll have Babylon nuked. You'll have the battle of Armageddon. And that's when Christ literally returns to the earth physically to rule and reign for 1,000 years with those who are saved. So, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing is just to be saved. For Muslims to get saved, for Jews to get saved, for Americans to get saved, and to stop supporting this Antichrist agenda, to be prepared. Many Christians are pre-trib. They think that they're not going to go through this 7 year period. They don't think that there's going to be this war. They don't think the reason why they're trying to usher this in, Harrison, is because they believe they get raptured as soon as they usher it in. They think it's an ejection seat button. They don't realize that if they usher this in, it's going to be them partaking in this tribulation, partaking in this great slaughter. And so that's why it's kind of a fool's errand to assist the devil. The devil is a liar. There's no truth in him. The synagogue of Satan isn't going to help you. You know, you don't make a deal with the devil and it works out. Judas did that. And then once he realized he was condemned, went and hanged himself. When he tried to give the money back to the Pharisees, they said, he's like, hey, I've screwed up. And they're like, see thou to it. What is that to us? Like, they're basically like, who cares? We don't care about you. The devil doesn't care about you. The false religion doesn't care about you. The only person that does care about you is the Lord Jesus Christ. And of course, that's why he does return at some point, because the Bible says this slaughter is going to be so bad that if Jesus allowed it to play out, the devil would have his will and kill everyone. I mean, the devil wants to kill every single person, and he's going to try and do that through the Antichrist. Another interesting prophecy, I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but the Bible talks about in Revelation chapter 12, a great flood where the devil's going to basically try to flood the entire earth. And this is interesting with the rainbow, because the rainbow is promised to not flood the entire earth. And of course, that's the symbol of the most Antichrist group of people, the LGBT. But, you know, the Bible says it's going to fail. And it's just kind of interesting, you know, all these different proclamations of climate change that they've kind of haven't talked about lately, but I'd be interested if they nuke all the polar ice caps in an effort to try and flood the world, they would fail. But I don't know. Have you heard anything about the possibility of another global flood?
No, but I know they're, you know, not slowing down on their ill-guided attempts to like block out the sun and do all sorts of crazy geoengineering. I actually have stories on that I was going to cover today. So, I mean, it all ties in together. And this is the amazing thing about, like, I don't even understand how you can be an atheist when the Bible exists and when the world that we live in today is this bizarre synthesis between the first book of the Bible in Genesis, where the serpent says, follow me and you will live forever. And we're on the cusp of, you know, age reversing technology and, you know, technical immortality, while it combines with the last book of the Bible and Revelations and all of these things that are very obviously being fulfilled in one way or another. We're going to get to like where we are on the timeline exactly on the other side of a short commercial break. Stay with us. Pastor Jonathan Shelley, BaptistBias.com, SBCKJV.com. We'll be right back. This is the War Room, InfoWars.com, fan.video. Share that link and we'll be right back.
I'm making this announcement on Tuesday, March 3rd, 2026. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. These are incredible products. You've seen the rave reviews. You've seen the five-star reviews. These are the very best game-changing supplements available, period. Again, I only sell things that really work because I want you to get them and I want you to love them. We now have an over 90% reorder on the supplements on the site. No one in that industry has it because the products are so good, and obviously you're loyal as well. And I thank you so much for keeping us on the air. We're changing the world. We're battling the globalists. We are having the greatest effect together. That's all of us against the new world order we've ever had. And it's all because of your support of my broadcast and other broadcasts like it. But regardless, the enemy recognizes that InfoWars is the tip of the spear. And the bad guys are continuing, just read the newspapers, try to shut us down as early as late March. We're battling them in court, but it looks like this could be the end. But that's okay, because the info war belongs to the people. The info war is about telling the truth and countering the lies of the globalists. And the AlexJonesStore.com is not owned by me. It's owned by Big Money. The backup Alex Jones Network that's ready is not owned by me. It's owned by them, and I'm going to work for them. And so as long as you support the sponsor, no matter what happens to InfoWars, at TheAlexJonesStore.com, you keep us on the air. So right now, your purchase at TheAlexJonesStore.com keeps InfoWars going, pays the payroll, the bandwidth, the satellites, all of it. But as soon as InfoWars shuts down, it's more critical than ever that you support TheAlexJonesStore.com because it will move forward into the future as our main sponsor. But regardless, this is a win-win. Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the info war continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers. And with one click in your profile, you cancel any time for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on top of everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Methylene Blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am, and the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and Methylene Blue. Get it while you can.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We have some late breaking news, unconfirmed so far, but Israeli media is reporting unconfirmed reports that Itamar Ben-Gvir has been involved in a car crash. He's actually been killed by an Iranian missile strike on his home, and we've seen missile strikes by Iran against the leadership of Israel. Sort of reminds me of this story. The NYPD mourns the loss of a police officer, Sorfli Davies, who passed away yesterday as a result of a medical episode while deployed to Kuwait. Yeah, I have some questions was the medical episode perhaps brought about by a missile exploding in his vicinity? I don't know, but it's suspicious to me. And it seems like one factor of this war is the fact that they're lying about the casualties and lying about the cause of death, the people who are died as a result of the conflict. So, again, unconfirmed, but I'd been hearing rumors that Ben-Gvir had been taken out, and it appears as though those are being spread by Israeli media and may be real. So a little update for you there as we continue to monitor the situation that's changing by the minute. My guest is Pastor Jonathan Shelley. He is the pastor of the Steadfast Baptist Church. He's produced the movie Sodomite Deception. You can find his website at baptistbias.com or sbckjv.com. And I just want to say thank you, Pastor Shelley, for actually standing up for the Christian worldview. It's long overdue that pastors in the Christian church in America speak out about this stuff and not stay in the shadows, but actually take on the, you know, what's going on in the world. Why do you think it's so rare for Christian pastors to actually take like hardcore, meaningful stances about world events these days?
I think I would be living proof of the reason why, because number one, you become a glossary term on the ADL website. Number two, you get protested for years. I've been evicted, sued. I can't bank at Bank of America. I can't use PayPal. I lost all of the YouTube accounts I had multiple times. I became a terrorist on Facebook. I couldn't have a Facebook account. I can't have an Airbnb account. I can't use pretty much every single email provider, MailChimp. I can't use any payment processor. When it came to credit card processing specifically, we're not allowed to use any credit card processing whatsoever. And again, this is just simply for preaching what the Bible says about Jews or about the LGBT or just really any unpopular topic. And so, you know, you get banned and censored heavily. It's really hard. And I'm sure you guys for sure know that's, you know, to the core. I mean, Alex was taken off YouTube, is one of the first personalities ever taken off YouTube. You guys had to go in some dark corner of the web and basically rebuild your entire platform and build a platform. And it's been harassed and tried to be taken from you guys. It's the same thing. Anybody that tries to say the truth will be attacked. Anybody that's speaking the truth will come under heavy, heavy attack and persecution. And the same with churches. That's why a lot of churches hide their sermons. They don't preach the Bible. They're afraid of certain topics. They don't want to change their doctrine. They don't want to see themselves have to go through any kind of adversity whatsoever. And, you know, this is not a biblical aspect. The Apostle Paul, they said about him that he turned the world upside down with the gospel. You see, in the book of Acts, you see mobs and protests, and you see people being dragged out of the city and stoned and killed and thrown in prison. And, you know, you have people like Owen Schroyer, who was thrown in prison. You have January 6th prisoners. You have just all kinds of, you have this weird lawsuit that y'all had, and they tried to strip away your business and try to say the Onion's now going to buy it and all this nonsense. You know, why is that stuff happening? It's because they don't want the truth out there. They don't want someone to speak what the Bible says. And of course, the ultimate truth is the Bible. The ultimate truth is the gospel. That's what our nation was founded on. That's why it was successful. And the powers that be don't want us to return to that. They don't want a revival. And a lot of pastors are cowards. They're afraid. Many pastors are not saved. The Bible teaches that there's many false prophets into the world. And so the false prophets, of course, are never going to tell the truth. But then even those that are actually saved and have the truth on their side, they've been lied to by Zionist propaganda. They've been lied to by dispensationalism. They're afraid of losing their building. They're afraid of losing money. They don't want to be evicted. They don't want to be protested. You know, John the Baptist is out in the wilderness and he didn't have any money. And I think because of covetousness, I think because of pride, I think because people don't want to work, they're lazy, that you see a lot of pastors, a lot of Christians making Christianity look lame, look bad. They're now putting roller coasters in their services. They're jumping on trampolines. They're playing basketball for the service. They're watching movies. They're doing anything but preach the Bible. And it's a shame. It's embarrassing. You see a lot of people trying to go back to some older religions because they're just so disillusioned. I feel like people are more disillusioned with religion than ever before because of how many false prophets and liars there are. And to me, it's important to get out there, try to be public, try to, you know, still reach people as much as I can, despite all of the censorship, because, you know, I want people to see, hey, Christianity is still good. Church is still good. The Bible's still good. Jesus is still good. And, you know, you got to fight. It's going to be a battle. Sometimes it's David versus Goliath, But you know what? David wasn't intimidated by that. He went out there. Think about how many children of Israel were there, and they were unwilling to fight Goliath. Yeah. It took some small shepherd boy to say, you know what? Here, my Lord, send me.
And
it took
and that's,
one guy to have the courage.
And that's key, isn't it? Is that how do you read the Bible and not come away with the idea that I'm going to have to possibly suffer and maybe die for this, but it's worth it. Like how it's cowardice. It's really cowardice. I think at the end of the day, I think these people know exactly what they're doing, and it's just, it's easier and they're scared of even just scared of people not liking them. It is actual just cowardice. It's tearing us down from the inside. And I just completely agree with everything that you're saying. It's sort of a perfect setup for a clip I wanted to show you and have you respond to, because this guy, extremely popular evangelical pastor, John Hagee. And, I think people are going to be hearing a lot more about this guy just because it's this ideology that's informing the military that's then, you know, deploying the army on the basis of these types of beliefs. And again, when you read the Bible, I don't even understand how you could possibly support what this guy's about to say. Let's go to Pastor, Evangelical Pastor John Hagee, and we'll get, Pastor Jonathan Shelley's response on the other side. Let's watch.
The Bible proves that the Jewish people are the most unique people on the face of the earth. They are a chosen people. They are a covenant people. They are a cherished people. They are the apple of God's eye. The unchallengeable fact of the Bible is that Israel and the Jewish people are unique. Listen, Israel did not choose this uniqueness. God chose it for them. Listen to David's prayer in 1 Chronicles 17:20. It's one of the most powerful words in the scripture. O Lord, there is none like you, nor is there any God beside you. And who is like your people Israel? Listen, the one nation on the earth whom God went to redeem for himself as a people. Chosen and still cherished. Deuteronomy 7:6, for you, Israel, are a chosen people, a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for himself. Listen to this next sentence. A special treasure above all the people on the face of the earth. That includes the United States of America.
Okay, so to me, that is completely insane. I mean, even just the most cursory reading of the Old Testament, God may have chosen the Jewish people, but he often gets mad and punishes them for failing to uphold their end of the bargain. Like the idea that they're his, God's special little treasures that can never do any wrong. It's like, where is he even getting that? Like, where is this even coming from? That's what I don't understand.
You kind of have to wonder how much this guy's getting paid, like $7,000 a sermon or what. But, you know, specifically, you can't just carte blanche just take a positive statement about Israel in the Old Testament and then just apply that to Harvey Weinstein or Adam Sandler or whoever you want, you know, Sarah Silverman or something. Like, that's just, you know, God's not a racist. The Bible's really clear that God's not a respecter of persons consistently throughout the Bible. Plus, the verses he's quoting in the Old Testament about them being chosen and special is actually quoted in the New Testament as well. In 1 Peter 2, the Bible says, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So all of those prophecies about, quote, Israel are still true today if we define Israel correctly. But the Bible says in Romans 9, for they're not all Israel, which are of Israel, meaning there's a difference between a physical Israel and a spiritual Israel. And just because you were of the nation of Israel did not mean you were saved, did not mean you were the child of God. You had to have your faith in Jesus Christ to be chosen, to be a child of God. And in the New Testament, Gentiles who believe in Jesus Christ are the chosen generation, the royal priesthood. They are the elect. They are the true Jews, according to Romans 2.
It's pretty explicit.
The Bible makes it clear that it's not about an ethnicity. It's not about a nation. It's not about a race. God's not just picking some random race of people that are bank lenders and money usurers and pornographers and just said, you guys are special no matter what. Like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, in Europe, all the guys that are coin clipping and charging interest are just magically special, and all the Christians with the Bibles are somehow bad. Like, you know, what kind of bizarre logic is this? Of course, in Europe, you know, this belief didn't really exist for hundreds of years. It's only now in America where we've seen this rise of Zionist belief again, where we see this propaganda. And, you know, someone like John Hagee's a false prophet. He's a false teacher. He's obviously being funded and paid, you know, some kind of money or some kind of compensation by Israel lobbies and stuff to say these things. And look at all the SEALs happy to clap for it. I mean, unfortunately, the boomer generation has hook, line, and sinker fallen for this lie. And they like this lie, and they just want to hear this lie for some reason. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's a shame on any group of people that just accept lies. You know, how does 9/11 happen and no one really cared? You know, it's obvious that Building 7 doesn't just collapse on itself when nothing even hit it. You know, and this, like, who did that? What happened? Why did we go to war in the Middle East? But look, if they can get away with 9/11 and they can do a war for years and no one's really even caring or asking questions, but, you know, then I think they realize we can literally get away with anything. And what needs to happen is Christians need to get back in the pulpit and preach what the Bible says on these issues and destroy the false doctrine of Zionism.
Yeah. And so how do you think we combat this? Because, you know, I'm sure you've run up against it. If you've ever had a conversation of somebody who believes the type of stuff John Hagee does, I mean, it's like arguing with a brick wall, and they say the most insane stuff, and as if it's fine. You know, there's like, yeah, we'll just nuke all of them and kill them. And you go, you think Jesus wants us to do that? And they'll respond with, God works in mysterious ways. And it's like, no, God does not, he doesn't tell you to nuke somebody because it's actually secretly a virtue. It's like, should we try to reason with them on their own ground and go, look, you think this is the apocalypse, only lay out how the Revelations doesn't align with it. Is it better to say, hey, you know, look at the way this secular nation state is just hijacked. You're being betrayed by your church. Like, what is the correct approach? Because obviously the evangelical bloc in America is very powerful and they're pushing for this with all they've got. How do we combat this? So what's the best strategy, do you think?
It's definitely a difficult topic to address, because I don't think it's difficult to prove this. Generation Z is pretty much so anti-Israel now because it's just so obvious in the Bible. And the boomers, it doesn't matter how much proof or evidence you show them. It's like Trump saying the Epstein files is a hoax. It's like, okay, well, obviously this guy's not being sincere at this point. I think what you have to do is you have to have networks and platforms that are willing to say this and just keep saying it. Because here's the problem. You have someone kind of get out there and say something and they just get attacked and destroyed, and then everybody shuts up again. It can't go mainstream. You can't get the traction. And without popular sentiment, it's kind of an issue. I feel like it's already dead. Personally, I think that's why we even bombed Iran, because I think that they needed an excuse to go ahead and start the war, because Democrats don't start wars typically. We really see the Republican Party kind of starting the war, but Democrats have no problem continuing that war effort. So I almost felt like this was just their last chance to basically have the boomers all on their side, yep. Republicans bomb them, and then just let Democrats just continue this war for who knows how long. Just like the war in Iraq. Who started that? Oh yeah, Bush, who, you know, drop, obviously September 11th, you have this huge thing happen during the Republican push, so you can then push a war effort. I think they know what they're doing. I think they put Republicans in office so they can start wars, and they put Democrats in office so they can basically push more degeneracy on our culture. And it's just a 1-2 punch that Satan's constantly pushing.
They can welcome refugees from the war that the Republicans start.
Yeah, harm our economy so much and just steal more money through inflation and printing money and just degeneracy, corruption. They basically line all their pockets so that they can just fund the next election or whatever they need to do. There's a huge rot here, and it's not so simple as like, hey, just show them these few Bible verses. Look, if you show somebody a few Bible verses on this, they either get it or they don't. And there's not really much you can do outside of that. To me, there's just needs to be brave leaders that are going to say what's true on this and not back down. And not only not back down, but not be a scumbag and get caught, you know, doing some shady thing and get taken out of the picture. You know, you need some righteous people to stand up and say, hey, this isn't right. This isn't what the Bible teaches, and just put the pressure on the other team. I think it's just more about pressure than it is the truth, because the Bible speaks for itself on this issue. No one is convinced of this lie anymore. Boomers are unwilling to hear in many cases. But I say that, you know, honestly, I have a lot of people in my church that are young, and they keep telling me one by one, they're like, hey, my parents are finally waking up on this issue. Right. Hey, my parents are finally questioning this. And, you know, a lot of times it's because, oh, Alex said this, or right. InfoWars said this, or, you know, even from sources that I'm not personally a fan of, but like people like Nick Fuentes and Candace Owens and all these other people, just the fact that it's being talked about wakes up some of the normies. And so to me, it's more about the exposure than it is the argument. I think the arguments are easy to win people over. It's just about people applying consistent pressure and having good talking points and getting the right people out there. I mean, there's a reason why I'm on a show right. today. There's a reason why I have a podcast. I think that we need somebody out there saying this stuff. It's frustrating that we don't see more people trying to say it.
And there's a reason why Tucker Carlson is the target of their ire right now, because he's respectable. He's a family man, as you point out. I mean, they're happy to, you know, have somebody be against them that's actually secretly degenerate, and they can ruin his reputation and thereby destroy the arguments he was making. With somebody like Tucker Carlson, you can't do that as much. And I think you're right about, you know, it's really just, even if churches want to do it purely cynically because it will get more people in the doors, there's a reason that young people are going to Orthodoxy or to Catholicism and not Protestantism, because Protestantism keeps trying to change with the times. And nobody who really cares and actually believes in God wants to go to a church with a rainbow on the door. It is literally a slap in God's face, where God basically said, I'll never, I punished you once for your sexual degeneracy. I'm sorry I had to do that. I feel bad about it. I'll never do it again. And so they take the symbol of that and wear it. Just be like, remember how you can't do anything to us? Remember how you promised not to do anything? It's like,
yeah, it's the ultimate middle finger.
God, it's just, and anybody who understands that, that's not a real church. It's something else. It's Satanism in disguise.
It's conquered.
So yeah, so people
it's conquered.
Just saying it powerfully and coming out and saying the truth will get more people. And the more people that go to the churches who tell the truth, the more churches you'll see tell the truth. I mean, this isn't going to happen overnight. It does need to be an incremental and sort of just continuous effort from us.
Yeah. And of course, I think the spiritual battle is also raging simultaneously, getting people saved, getting people to start reading the Bible again. You know, this nation was built on the Bible. And if our country doesn't have people start reading the Bible again, doesn't get back to the King James Bible, doesn't actually get saved, none of the other stuff matters. Politics is downstream of culture. And if we don't change the culture, if we don't wake up the masses, if we don't get people to start caring again, you know, what are they going to go watch Bad Bunny speak mm-hmm. in a foreign language at the halftime show? You know, how is that going to fix anything in our country? You know, it's bread and circuses all over again. It's kind of shameful. You kind of have to wonder, how far does America have to fall before they start caring again? I think some people do care, and I think there's a lot of people seeking right now, but we need even more. And we need people to get serious about preaching the gospel, getting people saved, saying what's true, saying what's right. If you're a boomer out there, hey, it's time to change and wake up and kind of reject some of the lies that you've been told. And, you know, it is sad to see churches conquered by the rainbow flag, conquered by false religion, conquered by false prophets coming in and lying and basically just disgracing the cause of Christ. And so we need more good men to get into churches, to take Christianity serious. I think being a pastor is probably the most important job in the world. And we need pastors to get up and preach the Bible unapologetically, to have confidence to say what the Bible says. And, you know, it's funny. They always try to take the weirdest person and present them as the right view. So it's like, you're against the LGBT. Who do they say you are? You're Westboro Baptist, mm-hmm. a bunch of weirdos and freaks who go protest someone's funeral or something. It's like, hey, you're against the Jews. Who are you? Oh, you're Kanye West, who's wearing a ski mask and holding up a net and, you know, yeah. with a Yahoo and just kind of like really provocative. Now, again, I think that Kanye woke up a lot of people on that issue, but at the end of the day, it's like, aren't they trying to pick on purpose kind of the weirdest person saying this to try and make that idea seem like a bad idea, demonize the idea through the person saying it? So, you know, we need some normal people right. too. We need some just average people. I like that InfoWars gives a voice to the people. I mean, you constantly have callers coming in, average people. We need more of those. And we need those people talking to their friends, neighbors, going to their churches. You know, yeah. my friend, Pastor Steven Anderson, made a movie, Marching to Zion. It's really impactful, helps a lot of people kind of realize the truth on this particular issue. So, you know, I'd highly recommend, you know, people getting into a good church, becoming a Baptist, getting a King James Bible, preaching through. Yeah, there's, there's Kanye. It's like, look, I'm not even against Kanye, but I'm just saying, like, wasn't this one of the weirdest interviews ever?
I'll tell you, it was weird having the Prime Minister of Israel in our office. That was a real shock. Old Netanyahu. He was ahead of the curve on that, wasn't he? No, you're exactly right. And this is the thing that I think InfoWars, just dialed down into and established early on. And we've stuck with the whole time, which is that you don't go to the extremes. You stick with the founding fathers. You stick with just traditional Christianity, because that's also a strategy of sort of, the people who do wake up to like what Israel's up to and maybe the negative influence of Jewish people in this country. They go from 0 to 100, and they might be talking to a normie who's like, I don't know, I thought Israel was our allies. And they're like, but do you know the Holocaust didn't happen? And it's like, guys, you got to calm down. I'm not even saying like lie about stuff. I'm just saying like the argument, my true beliefs is that I love the Jewish people. I love the people of Israel. I think they're in a self-destructive spiral right now that I wish they'd wake up from. And I don't like a lot of the influence and subversion in America, a lot of which is predicated on, by their own admission, Jewish people, you know, spreading their beliefs. That's my First Amendment right to make that argument. And I do it out of love for both the Jewish people and my country and America and our values. And I feel like we have to be able to make that argument without falling into the dichotomy of you either want all the Muslims to die and Jews reign supreme, or you want all the Jews to die because you're a Nazi. It's like, guys, how about we want war to stop? We love the Jews, but that doesn't mean that we are Jewish or that we have to believe the same morality as them. We're a different religion with different values. So, I mean, do you take that into account? Like, how do you make the arguments in a way that will actually appeal to the decent, lovely people of America who don't want to be hateful and don't want to be biased? And so they won't be, and they'll reject you if that's how you seem.
Yeah, again, I agree with you. We need more people that have a reasonable approach. I think that's why they don't like Tucker, because he's usually not even saying anything too extreme. He's just saying, like, is Israel just always right? You know, and he just laughs or whatever. And it's just like, at least it's kind of like a good question, as opposed to, you know, going to this extreme of like, Hitler was always right. Hitler never made a mistake. You know, or the other side of the equation, like you said, just bomb everybody in the Middle East. All Muslims are just literally Satan. And so like you have all these extreme opinions. You need some people to put out a coherent argument. I don't like, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist. 9/11 is an inside job. It's obvious. There's a lot of other issues. Obviously JFK, you have questions about the Titanic. You have the Federal Reserve. There's a lot of crazy things going on. The Epstein files. Jeffrey Epstein obviously didn't off himself. So obviously there's a lot of questions, but then people kind of bring in a lot of weird stuff too. And I'm like, even if you believe the weird stuff, just keep it to yourself for a few minutes Let's talk about the reasonable stuff. And again, if you want to dive into that on your own and get excited about it, sure. But I think on these issues, we need to find a reasonable approach. We need to focus on the things that are really important here. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, hey, Christ is what the Bible is about. It's not about just a bunch of big-nosed bankers, you know, that God just gives a carte blanche blank check to.
Yeah. And by the way, it's their own distance from Christ that's causing them all the problems. It's their lack of brotherly love. Again, we could go on and on about this. I love it. We're going to have you back again soon. Pastor Jonathan Shelley, BaptistBias.com, SBCKJV.com, pastor of Steadfast Baptist Church. Long, long overdue that American Christian preachers actually do the work that Christian preachers should be doing.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site,
You can become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals with everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexandersquare.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexandersquare.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. We'll actually be moving away from the topic of Iran this hour, but not quite yet. Donald Trump is live right now taking questions about the conflict. So we're going to go to that live for the first 5 minutes. Then we'll be joined by Kelsey Sheeran at six after. But let's go to Donald Trump now live taking questions on the Iran conflict.
And they wanted it protected. Granted, it's pretty good, but they wanted it protected by a lot deeper. They wanted to go a lot deeper, and they started the process while rapidly building conventional ballistic missiles. They were going to do it all at the same time that threatened our overseas bases and soon could have reached even our homeland. The regime's intention was to use this exponentially growing ballistic missile threat to make it virtually impossible to prevent them from obtaining a nuclear weapon. So as you probably saw, they had a tremendous number of missiles, most of which had now been used or destroyed, and very unsuccessfully used, because we have been able, for the most part, to shoot them all down. What incredible technology. The Patriots have been unbelievable, and other things. And the laser technology that we have now is incredible. It's coming out pretty soon. We're literally lasers will do the work of, at a lot less cost, do the work of what the Patriots are doing or what other things are doing. The situation was very quickly approaching the point of no return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco, so involved, that I thought that they were going to attack us. I thought they would, if we didn't do this at the time we did it, I think they had in mind to attack us. And if you notice, they did something which was very foolish, very stupid, I would say. They attacked their neighbors. And the neighbors were largely neutral, or at least weren't going to be involved, and they got attacked. And it had the reverse effect. The neighbors came onto our side and started attacking them, and actually quite successfully. If you look at Saudi Arabia, you look at UAE, Qatar, and others, but they were strong and they were smart, but they got attacked. Nobody, when I first heard it, I said, no, somebody made a mistake. There was no mistake. UAE had over 1,000 missiles shot at it, knocked them almost all down. On the very first day I came down the escalator in 2015, I said, quote, I will stop Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And all I'm doing is keeping my promise. Think of that. That was in 2015. I said it. It was a threat then and a much bigger threat now. But no longer a threat, not for a long time anyway. We want to keep it that way. As we continue Operation Epic Fury, we're also focused on keeping energy and oil flowing to the world. And I will not allow a terrorist regime to hold the world hostage and attempt to stop the globe's oil supply. And if Iran does anything to do that, they'll get hit at a much, much harder level. I will take out those targets that were easy and that I mentioned just before. We'll take them out so quickly, they'll never be able to recover, ever. If they want to play that game, they better not play that game. In the long run, oil supplies will be dramatically more secure without the threat of Iranian ships, drones, missiles, nuclear menace, or anything. So the Strait of
Hormuz is going to remain safe. We have a lot of Navy ships there. We have the best equipment in the world inspecting for mines. Again, most of their ships are down at the bottom of the sea. But we will hit them so hard that it will not be possible for them or anybody else helping them to ever recover that section of the world. They do anything. In recent years, the regime and its terror proxies have launched attacks on hundreds of commercial vessels. We're putting an end to all of this threat once and for all, and the result will be lower oil prices, oil and gas prices for American families. We've done that. We've done it. We brought it very low. This was just an excursion into something that had to be done. We're getting very close to finishing that, too. In the meantime, during this brief disruption, the United States is offering political risk insurance to any tankers operating in the Gulf. So we're putting up risk insurance.
All right, folks, that's Trump with a live address. We'll be back on the other side with Kelsey Sheeran in studio. Don't go anywhere.
The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have a foundation for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really know it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm joined in studio by Kelsey Sheeran. She's a combat veteran, mental performance coach, and independent journalist. She's the host of The Kelsey Sheeran Perspective, a best-selling author, and a leading voice in the movement opposing Canada's MAID expansion, medical assistance in dying, a.k.a. medical suicide. You can follow her Substack at Kelsey Sheeran and on X at Kelsey Burns. That's K-E-L-S-I Burns on X. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I fixed the X thing, by the way. Somebody taught me how I could actually change it. So just Kelsey Sheeran now. So I fixed it.
Oh, so it's just Kelsey Sheeran.
I fixed it now. I'm so grateful I could figure that out finally. So
okay.
Don't mind me. But
so on X at Kelsey Sheeran.
There it is.
K-E-L-S-I-S-H-E-R-E-N.
Nailed it.
There you go.
Nailed it.
So, let's get into MAID, shall we? I mean, it is insane. You were here not that long ago, but even in the time between now and then, so much has developed. What is the latest with the drive to kill everybody in Canada?
Well, it's not, that's the worst part. Everybody says Kelsey opposes MAID in Canada. I oppose MAID across the globe and in America's 13 states and one jurisdiction for 14 total. You guys are doing it too.
Right.
So, you know, I think the where we're at right now since I've been on, I know I've been on a few times since December and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to talk about it. So thank you. Is that we now have found so many really disgusting motives in America that are quite shocking to me. And I'm still waiting for RFK or Donald Trump to kind of step in and say, guys, we have to stop this, because just the same way that Canada slow rolled the program and allowed the ideology of the pro-death cult through Dying with Dignity to kind of come in the 90s and usher into our government, you guys have your own death group called Compassion and Choices. Isn't that a great name? So Compassion and Choices is an organization that is a nonprofit charity. It's under your, you know, your 5-0. And these are people who spend every waking minute of their life congregating to the tune of $33 to $35 million is what their current asset sits are. And what they do is they go and partner with people like the Rabin Group. Do you know who the Rabin Group is?
No.
Oh, you're gonna love these.
Like, I should.
I feel like you should. I feel like all of America should. So let me tell you about them, because we recently discovered their plans until 2028 for America. And so Compassionate Choices has now partnered again, $30 million organization.
Crazy.
And hired the Raven Group. Now, this is a social cohesion. You know, these are the people that are responsible for your big protests. They work with, and they boast who they work with. So they've worked with the Obama Foundation, the Bill Gates Foundation, and there's a long laundry list. But ironically, Compassion and Choices isn't on their client list. But what they have stated in their own, this is what's crazy, it's on YouTube. It's on YouTube. They talk about their plans, and what they are expecting to do over the next few years in America is expand MAID to over 50% of where the American population lives so that they can have access to MAID. So we talked about the states with you guys before, but it's important to know what they are again so that you can protect your loved ones because, you know, the Raven Group has made it very clear their incentive in this call working alongside them is to change social cohesion so that places that don't necessarily have legislation on the table can actually start to slow roll and target their community members to be comfortable with the idea of euthanasia and physician assisted suicide, which is what America does. And that's just for track one. And they're targeting these areas of a high elderly density population. So the current states, I've said this before, I know you guys have heard it, but go with me. The current states right now, yeah, that's their lovely website, guys. So they have 13 states, one jurisdiction, so 14 total. So Michael Malice has been doing incredible job. He actually just named my new book because he's brilliant, and he calls it Killing Grandma, so thank you to him. He went on Rogan talking about these states for me because he said, look, everyone wants to bang on about Canada, but Kelsey's right. America is doing this and it's slow rolling it as a form of healthcare. So currently California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York is your newest, Oregon and Vermont, Washington and Washington DC. Now, the reason it's important to note about these is because Oregon and Vermont do not have a residency requirement.
Oh.
So anyone in America, say you're from Texas, say you've become compassionate toward the idea of euthanizing your grandma, you can take a one-way flight to Oregon or Vermont and get qualified by two very sick MAID assessors who get paid an ungodly amount of money to say that you're okay to die. And then they'll set a cup in front of grandma and grandma drinks the poison. So that's what's crazy about that. Now, the point that we should be paying attention to, because there is actual legislation on the table in America right now, and they have plans, and I quote, this is right from Compassion and Choices. By 2028, half of the U.S. adult population will live where medical aid in dying is accessible. And they politically planned legislative campaigns for 18 states in 2016. And in key states such as Nevada, Virginia, and Florida, even though Florida doesn't have legislation yet, the current ones that do have legislation on the table, this is crazy to me, Virginia, Tennessee, Rhode Island, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Minnesota, Mass, Kentucky, Iowa, Arizona, and India. Now tell me, friend, what do they all have in common in those areas, potentially?
Oh, good question. Well, a lot of retirees.
Ah, we're nailing it.
Yes.
And they're only targeting track one, which is all your terminally ill or elderly population. So, you know, I just had this conversation with Constantine Kissin and Francis Foster like an hour ago. And there was one point that was really good to illustrate was, much like the trans movement towards children and mutilating children, they start here, right? They start targeting kids and going up. And what these death cults do is they target top down. So if you can convince grandma that she should end her life, now what's going to happen is you have all of the elderly in that family and family members and children all going, well, grandma did it. So it's okay then when mom needs it. So it's okay then when we go to mature minors. You see what I'm saying? So trans went up, we're going down, and we're meeting in the middle. Now, Canada itself, we are about to, and I think people have seen this now, it went viral the past couple weeks. I'm so grateful. Zuby, I went on Zuby's podcast and we discussed it. Canada is about to cross the 100,000th murder in less than 10 years. We're estimating between April and June of when that target's going to hit. And then after that, we're expecting 110,000 deaths by the calendar end of 2026. Now, that is without expanding to the mentally ill. Mental illness comes on the table March of 2027.
Wow.
So we are expecting a rapid uptick in 2027. And then the parliamentary AbMed report, this is important to note for people who have children in Canada. AMED report was done by the Parliamentary of Canada, where they looked at mature minors, they looked at mate expansion. And in Canada, we don't have parent consent, meaning like our government can take our kids.
Right.
Like it's pretty clear, everyone knows that. So a group of cardio moms reached out to me from Sick Kids Children's Hospital. I've been involved with Sick Kids before because there's an individual named Adam there. We call him Adam R. We don't say his last name. I don't want to be sued, even though he's quite public about it. He's the head of the PICU team for a lot of these children's families. And Adam was the head of a friend of mine's daughter's PICU team, Vea, and she was moved out of the hospital for a reason. He advocates on the board of CANMAP, which is the people who train all the doctors to kill people. And he's advocating for mature minors while running and participating at one of the largest children's hospitals. Now, that's important because the AMED report stated very clearly that the government of Canada establishes a requirement where appropriate, the parents and guardians of a mature minor, which is down to age of 12, by the way.
Yep.
And that's also where you, ironically, lose consent to your children's medical decision-making and access to files, also at 12. No coincidence there. The mature minor may be consulted in the course of an assessment process for MAID, but the will of the minor who is found to have the requisite decision-making capacity ultimately will take priority. Parents and guardians may or may not be even consulted.
It sounds too bad to be true, right? Because what you're describing is like, as parents, one day you get a letter from the hospital saying your kid came to us, said they were sad, and we killed them. Like, that's what it's, I mean, it's like too horrible to believe.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm misunderstanding that.
No, you're not. So this, the reason I bring papers with me, I know so many shows I hate when I do it, but I do it because the stuff that we're talking about is not an off the cuff opinion.
Right.
It is not me making something up to be emotive or get clicks or do any of those things. It's very clearly stated in our own parliamentary reports and our own documentation and paperwork. So it's always best when I read directly from what the government is saying, so I cannot be taken out of context. Very clearly, Sick Kids removes consent. Majority of hospitals remove consent at 12 years old and access to your child's medical records. Period, full stop, have proof of it, posted it. The AMED report itself is very clear. That means in 2023, and before that, they were already discussing adding children. So when people like Dying with Dignity or Compassion and Choices and the government argues, this is just for grandma. This is just for grandma. Yeah, that's one of those pamphlets we found. And it's not. It's never been just for grandma. And you even have senators, your own state senators, stating, we just need to get this legalized here, and we will expand and amend as we go.
Right.
So they've told us their plan. They've made it very clear. But there is hope in Alberta. So this is about to come out. It's not out yet. But I have been told I can discuss it. The Alberta government reached out to me and said, hey, we're about to do something. Can you just kind of give people a heads up? So Alberta is going to be putting a bill forward and trying to stop track two in their province.
Oh, good.
So track two is your non-foreseeable death. That is your mature minors. That is your mentally ill. That is basically we just kill grandma there.
Okay.
I'm still not okay with it.
Right.
But here's what I've had to come to grips with is you cannot stop a bullet train. You have to slow it first.
Mm.
So I am optimistic that where we are going with this is that there will be a province that potentially has its head on straight, and that I'm hoping other provinces will follow suit, because right now it goes Quebec, Ontario, and British Columbia, and that is where we kill the majority of the citizens that are being poisoned to death by their doctors. Now, it's important to also state that, like, where we're at right now, I found something that was... You think that I come on with positive news, but I don't. I found something that was really gross 2 days ago when prepping to come down here. And I found out the billing codes that doctors and assessors and how much per billing code per patient they're allowed to use and what they make on average. Is that something you would like to do?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the hell they get $100,000 for vaccinating enough people. So,
yeah.
Their incentive structure is not always the most pleasant thing to read. So this is the, like a doctor in Canada performs MAID and this is how they bill it to the insurance company, or I guess
Canada
since
Canada.
It's all okay. So this is the code that they use to bill for MAID.
Yeah, so how it works, right, is you need two mate assessors, which are different, hypothetically different people.
Okay.
And so each one that they can bill for that situation, which, by the way, Canada now in the last 2024 report states that we have 2,266 maid killers in the country. And by the way, they won't put them all on a list because they know I'll find it.
Right.
They will not list these people. You have to independently find them. So I'm working on that right now. But roughly out of the, all of those doctors doing maid, 350 are doing the majority of the 100,000 deaths that have happened. Well, if you're doing an average, okay, say there's 55% of these three doing all of these deaths, follow the math with me. That's like an average of like 214 kills each. Okay, that's 214. And the FBI defines a serial killer right. as two or more, right? Okay. Now, if you're, say you're doing that, you got 100,000, 55% of these 100,000 deaths are performed by 350 physicians. Well, that's, you know, 55,000 procedures. Even if you break it down further and say they only kill 157 people. Well, you know, you can charge about $1,800 to $1,000, right? Because an assessment is, you know, roughly $300. And then a maid procedure is between, you know, $300 to $500, depending on your qualifications. So on average, it's about, you know, $800, $826 if you do one assessment and one procedure and one set of drugs. Not both assessments, but that's if you do one, and one. The drugs are $147. The average person somebody could make for murdering 157 Canadian souls is $161,710 a year. So six figures. And then you have Ellen Weeb, who admits to over 1,000 deaths, and that's roughly over $800,000. And don't worry, she's been doing abortions for 40 years prior to that.
Right.
And an abortion in Canada is between $200 and $400.
That's wild.
And that's what you bill. So the reason that's important, guys, is because this is not just a moral issue, which we already all struggle with, or if you have a mind, you do. But this is now a financially incentive. Forget what the government's right. going to save. Now, what are the doctors actually making their practices on? And then the Keanu story we spoke about last time I was here, you know, the 26-year-old that kind of went viral. And, you know, I spoke more to Margaret about it, his mom, and I said, like, do you have the receipts of the drugs? She goes, yeah. Because when he flew to British Columbia, he had to go pick up and buy his own drugs.
Oh, wow.
And then I decided to be cheeky. I was curious. I knew he was made in a funeral home. He wasn't made in a hospital or in a care facility. He drove himself to a funeral home. So I made a video calling that funeral home. And within 2 minutes, I found out how easy it was to be killed for roughly $300 to $500 at a funeral home, and the doctor will meet you there when you bring your own drugs. And they can even, my friend, they can even handle the cremation there too. So
one-stop shop.
It's a one-stop shop. And so, like, look, I said this earlier today. We can have the moral conversation of, can a society handle a program like this? Canada has proved we cannot.
Right.
So then why is the American government, and which, by the way, let me be very clear, husband's American, love America, served with America. I would like to live in America.
Right.
But why, guys? Why are we at a point where a Canadian podcaster has to sound an alarm so loud and you're still not paying attention? Because Gavin Newsom, which I'm sure everyone in this building loves, Gavin Newsom just recently admitted that he was a participant in illegally mating his own mother in 2002.
Really? I did not know that.
Nobody knows that, even though he wrote about it in his own memoir, and it's also been reported by the Washington Post.
And, of course, California is where they're already setting the table for 12-year-olds are in charge of their own medical.
Right. So, but here's the thing with that, though, right? You have a governor who actually said himself, in his own words, I hate her for making me participate in that because it was so traumatic.
Right.
But then he rolls the program into California in 2015 and 2016. So what's the incentive if you've participated in, again, it was not legal till 2015, 2016. And in 2002, he participated in mating his own mom. There it is. God, whoa. I love you guys.
I hated her for it. That's wild.
Right. But why? This is February this year. Why am I the only one talking about this?
Yeah, that's insane. Well, and actually that was my next question was like, what is the motivation? Because I can understand being against this and wanting to put your full, you know, like you are just like dedicating your life to fighting this because it's so evil. But it's like, who is paying tens of millions of dollars, but who is driven to push this? Who is like taking this on as a righteous cause? Like, what is the incentive for that? That's wild.
Listen again, it goes back to the spiritual warfare thing in a real way. So we don't have to get we don't even have to be conspiratorial about it. You know, you've got the eugenic side of things, which we already knew failed miserably. And now Canada is about to hit numbers bigger than World War II.
Right.
You know, forget the Holocaust. People came at me. They said, well, you're comparing it to the Holocaust. I said, in no way am I comparing this to the Holocaust. I'm comparing it to the eugenics program that was utilized to kill 200,000 German by Germans, mentally ill and disabled people. Yeah. And Canada has now hit the 100,000th. We're about to, correction. So if we can't see the correlation here and we cannot learn from history and we cannot understand that there is a financial incentive by the government to save money, there is a financial incentive by the pharmaceutical companies to provide the poison, and there is a financial incentive by the doctors to change all of their practices to easily billable. You know what? I know a doctor who does 4 to 6 a day.
Oof.
So they go, dude, that's stripper money.
That's wild.
But think about the amount. Think about that. $800 on average a patient. You pop a few of those a day. And you do that every day, 5 days a week.
I could do it for less than that.
I know, right? Well, we all could. But
not to make light of it, but it's people are coming in, they're killing them,
yes.
They're getting a check, and then they go home at night, and they're just like, I'm a doctor. And, like, what?
And they go on vacation, they take their kids to Disneyland, they, you know, and this is my point, is like, forget the money. We're doing the same approach we allowed. I'm just early to it, so it sounds crazy. This is why when people say, but Kelsey, it's just for grandma. And I said this to Constantine too. He goes, do you think there's a world? I said, that's what palliative care and hospice are supposed to be for.
Right.
But we're defunding those.
Right.
So is it free will if CanMap, who teaches the doctors how to kill people, has sold a protocol to Health Canada, which by the way they did, and is a charity, but doesn't let us see the IP in which they're teaching them?
Mm.
So is it free will and free understanding and consent if we don't know actually what's being taught to the doctors, how they're feeding information, how they're utilizing it as a tool? And then why are we so okay with all of a sudden our organ donations skyrocketing through the roof?
I was going to mention that too. That's because that's another money aspect as well.
Oh my gosh. And that's what we're seeing, because even after you use the drugs, right? Even if you're mated outside. So I'm going to start calling it what it is. Even if you've been medically murdered outside of the hospital and it's been done at home in a peaceful way where all of your grandkids watch, which is sick. If they move you quickly enough, they can grab the organs still.
Right.
If not, they're done in the hospital and then they wait for the time of death and then they wheel you in and they cut you open and take you for parts.
It's sad that I'm like trying to think of like, well, what if we ban, you know, organ harvesting? Then it's like, we shouldn't even be negotiating this. Like, we got to put a hard stop to this and just roll it. Not even a hard stop. We have to roll this back. Where it's been introduced, it has to be repealed.
Well, and so that's my point of why I'm so damn grateful for this platform. I get so much crap for coming on here, but I'm telling you, I'm so grateful for InfoWars and for you guys, because it shouldn't take some Canadian veteran who's just found something that makes me severely uncomfortable to come down and say, you guys are walking into a death trap. And I am praying one day we get a phone call that says, come educate these people really quickly, because if not, 18 more states. And here's, once these laws are in, you know how hard it is to repeal a law and bring it back and pull it back. But you have a chance. You guys have how many? 51?
50 states.
You have 50 states. Sorry.
So far.
Because you have districts too. So sometimes I get a little
wonky. And Greenland will be added soon.
I can't wait. Can you add us? Can I come?
Yeah, that actually might be happening.
I mean, I would love that. I would super love some sort of political asylum, and I would move in a heartbeat. But
we have much more than half the states don't have this yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
This is my point is, yes, I'm early and I sound crazy to the listeners, but I promise you, if I come and say something, I have the data, the reports, the proof, the evidence that this will not stop at killing grandma.
Yeah.
This will go to what we are discussing, which is mental illness alone in March of 2027, and mature minors, which are babies and children. And the College of Physicians has stated we should start euthanizing 0 to 1 for major mental, major illnesses, so they have a good quality of life.
Yep. Yep. No, and that's another one of the stories that broke in between the last time you were here, and we're gonna get a bunch of things. I've just been thinking about them as we've been talking. We'll print them out during the break.
Yeah,
because that's just one of them. Yeah, literally assisted suiciding babies. And again, the people that are pushing this, inexplicable though it may be, they are like dedicated to this. They are pushing it hard. If they can't get it through this bill, they'll put it in the next one. They're lobbying for this. They are in your state house right now trying to slow roll this and convince your authorities to at least let them get the foot in the door, because after that, you know, they get free run. So it's up to us, and it's up to people like my guest, Kelsey Sheeran, to be the opposition force, to go into the state house and lay out the facts for the legislatures. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
About to embark on a great adventure.
President Truman has chosen you and your crew to lead a highly classified mission.
Where do we pick up our escort?
There will be no escort.
All I can tell you is that this cargo can end the war. You can save millions of lives.
You are my crew, and our survival depends on all of you functioning as one unit.
Yes, sir!
A short time ago, an American airplane dropped one bomb on Hiroshima. With this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
Captain! There's something in the water!
It's the Japanese bomb!
All hands, your battle station!
Of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big Pentagon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really know it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Probably one of the only outlets covering what is just a jaw-dropping story. Well, just a series of jaw-dropping stories about MAID, medical assistance in dying in Canada, coming here and the really long overdue mission to stop it from coming here. Kelsey Sheeran is helping to lead that fight. You can find her on X at Kelsey Sheeran. That's K-E-L-S-I-S-H-E-R-E-N. She's also on Substack. Just search her name there. We're just looking up some of the stories in the break here. Canada may start euthanizing babies. That's the headline from lifenews.com. And like, it makes sense that the people trying to push this here, they know that if you start with this, it's not going to fly. You can't start with, we're going to kill babies in the infirm. You have to start with, we're going to let grandma pass in the way that she wants. But obviously that's a strategy. And it's like offensive that they would state that that's their strategy, because they just know. They know what they're doing is evil. They know people wouldn't accept it. They know they have to boil them like a frog in water slowly over time until they have us in their grasp. It is so deceitful and subversive. It's evil.
Yeah,
in so many ways.
It's not a shock at this point, right? Because when the enemy shows you who they are, you have to believe them the first time. It's kind of like the same sort of, you know, idea around radical Islam and what we've seen now, right? I said this from overseas when I came home and people are like, well, you're awfully racist. I said, no, when the enemy shows you who you are, believe them the first time. You shouldn't have to keep learning. And so this is where we're at, right? So like I said to you before the break, when you have the trans ideology come up and get children, it's only natural we start now going top down and we meet in the middle at 12. And so it's not a coincidence that now we're talking about this. I mean, this has been discussed before, but it had been brought up again. That's Dying with Dignity's lovely children's book there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have brought it up before, where they said, you know, look, we are going to be naturally moving this in a direction where people are going to be wanting this. And I said, well, I don't think that's the truth. I don't think people want to euthanize their babies, but turns out no different than people wanting to transition their children. It's an ideology. It's a cult mindset. It's a, I want to be a part of that. And then you have things like Munchausen by proxy and really looking at how do people fit in. And from a society's perspective, I get it. Nobody wants to see a child suffer. But when you have the College of Physicians from Quebec stating this, that we should start having discussion around euthanizing children from 0 to 1. They're not talking about, you know, healthy children. They're actually saying, well, what if they're born with something like spinal bifida?
Right.
You know, their quality of life is going to be poor. But I'm sorry. I know plenty of individuals.
Go talk to Leela Hart.
This is my point. Who are you to tell a 6-month-old that they're going to have a terrible quality of life? Isn't healthcare supposed to continue to improve time over time? People who are paralyzed, don't we have hope with Neuralink? Do we not have hope with other different products and things and medical innovations? Should we be just so quick to say that we should be killing children? Because again, be clear on the language. We're not removing suffering. We're euthanizing people with a poison that is not studied for killing. And the last time it was during the eugenics movement. And it would just happen to be utilized during the World War II time.
And just like as against it as I am, you can at least argue that people over 18 that are of sound mind are making their own decision. And if they want to kill themselves, really, there's not a lot of ways for us to stop it.
But what do we understand about the prefrontal cortex and the frontal lobe in development in children?
Yep.
You do not have a fully developed frontal lobe until you're what, 25?
Well, right. And that's my point. And so, you know, anybody from 12 to 25 it's kind of debatable whether they're, you know, capable, especially, I mean, have you been in high school? Has anybody here been in high school and maybe been in a relationship perhaps? Like your emotions literally are as fluctuating as they'll ever will be. Your hormones are firing on all cylinders. We're being messed up from the poison in the food and water anyway. So we're sort of dysfunctional from the outset. But right, that was my point, was that as a baby, I mean, you cannot frame it as anything other than murder. You can't even make the argument that, well, you know, they did want to die and we're just, you know, helping them do it in a safe way. No, these are babies, you are literally just murdering them. The idea that they could consent isn't even reality. So it's just murder.
Well, it is. And so, and then there's the argument that people have with me. Well, if they have informed consent, again, what is informed consent when the doctors are being taught a protocol and program that Health Canada can't legally see, that our tax dollars have paid for, and we can't even see? It's a closed, tight network, meaning CanMap has a conference, which, by the way, if any of you would like to protest it, is happening in Montreal the end of April. I can't go. I'm popping a baby out. But you could go. It's in Montreal. I talked about it on Redacted. I said to Clayton, I said, feel free to go. You have to be a doctor to attend, but you don't to be outside.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, this is where all of your doctors, the 2,200 doctors who are people who kill people, as part of their medical practice, are going to be discussing how to roll out and how to integrate this into society, how to speak about it, how to promote it, how to help people accept the idea as healthcare we should be killing people. Yeah. And this is my argument. We are supposed to be the globe's gold standard of healthcare. So is it free will and actual choice if every other thing we do. So say, for example, I have terminal cancer, right? Well, you're more than likely going to die on a waiting list to see a doctor in Canada. 23,000 right. people die a year. That's not even including the people who leave the waiting rooms and die in the waiting rooms.
Oh my God.
Okay. So say I have terminal cancer and I need to see a doctor. Well, what if I can't see them in time? And now it goes from like stage four to fully terminal. Okay. Now we're in this hallway here. Now what if you tell me I can't get access to, say I want to have ivermectin. Say I want ivermectin instead of a standard, you know, whatever it is.
You want to try something experimental.
I want to do something a little different. The answer is no. So, okay, so now I'm going down further down the path. Now they say, well, we can't get you hospice or palliative care because, well, we don't have enough beds and enough funding. Okay, so now I'm at the end and I'm in excruciating pain and I don't have another solution, all because I wasn't given actual healthcare, actual medical support. Is it then still free will and choice if that's the only solution they're giving you is death?
Right.
So this is where I'm trying to understand people's argument. They say, but I see in a world where Kelsey, and look, I get it. I see in a world where why can't you have compassion? Nobody wants to have, you know, this whole conversation around grandma can't function, can't eat her. She can't open her eyes. I am the most empathetic towards it and genuinely so, because the difference between me and the deaf community is that person raised you, looked after you, put all their money into you, all their time into you, and brought you into this world. Do you not owe it to them to do the same thing as they leave? When we have this program in Canada called the Special Access Program, which is one of the hardest in the world to get access to, but it's regulated psilocybin. I'm actually one of the recipients of that program for treatment-resistant depression.
Right.
Out of like 180 people, I was given it after thousands of dollars in lawyers and proving that I was treatment-resistant. Health Canada's option to me was electroshock therapy. So before they would give me a mushroom, but what do we understand about end of life? We understand through Johns Hopkins and Harvard and all this amazing research done in America, because you're allowed to study it.
Yeah.
That regulated psilocybin in the right set and setting with your loved ones, with your family, with a pastor, with whomever you want, can be incredibly healing and helping you come to grips with what it means to be leaving this earth.
Yeah.
But we don't offer that. We can do MAID same day for track one. Within 24 hours, if you are a track one recipient, you get two MAID assessors, you can be killed same day. And we have over 200 patients that were killed that way in the Ontario Coroner Report.
How much do you think this is just purely a money thing where they just ran the numbers and they went, we provide, you know, end of life healthcare. Most of the money goes to the last 10 years of somebody's life. Yep. If we just kill them 10 years earlier, we save that much money. I mean, it's sickening to think that that's how these decisions are being made. It's obviously a contributing factor. How much do you think is this just the consequence of socialized medicine and money? At the end of the day.
Well, if we want to get dark and sinister, let's go there. So there was a research study done by Western University, these two guys, and they did a if situation. So I'm very clear, because it was when I talked about it on Jillian Michaels, it went super viral, and they're like, we were only doing an if situation. That wasn't real. And I was like, but the law's going that way. So is it if or more of a when?
Right.
And they broke down the amount of people they think over 2027 to 2047, so when made for mental illness, medical murder for mental illness, up to 2047. And they ran the numbers based on the Indigenous people, the amount they would, the suicidal people, the mentally ill, the homeless, and then the elderly. And they came to a financial figure of $1.273 trillion.
Oof.
So anything with a T in front of it, friend, or a B, makes me think there's a lot of incentive financially. Now, that's not even just, that's just with the government of Health Canada. If, again, I said if, they keep going, because this is where these groups come at me. If that is where we're going, which legislation looks as is, as if it is. If it does, and that is the amount of money, that's just what the government stands to save. And you know that Carney loves to give another 2.5, a few billion here, a few billion there to Ukraine and all of our weapon systems like we just did. Oh, and a $100 million grant to Indian students, but not white people.
Right.
So that's not even what the doctors are making. That's not even what the doctors are making.
Right. That's just saving on things that they're not supplying later.
Exactly. Yeah. And so in this, what you're kind of looking at here, this citizen here, right? This is Canada saying, you know, in less than 10 years, we're going to hit 100,000 deaths. That means your doctors in Canada have killed over 100,000 people. Do we understand that? Are we clear about that? That is not a few people. Like, do you remember during COVID when they shut stuff down, when they said 10,000 people have died from COVID? Well, Canada, we don't have the full figure for 2025 yet, but the most accurate figure we do have is 2024. That's 16,499. We're estimating over 17,000 for 2025. And again, in 2023, 4,528 track one deaths were same day. That means no family could step in. Nobody could set up palliative care. Nobody could set up hospice. Nobody could make a plan for grandma and grandpa. And that's 5% of the cases were same day deaths in 2023 alone. So that means that 4,000 people applied in the morning and were dead by bedtime.
No waiting period. No consultation with the family. Although that can get kind of iffy, right? Because we've seen who's the woman, who's the angel of death woman?
Oh, Ellen Weeb.
Ellen Weeb.
She's who killed Keanu.
And she's the one who says, you know, well, the biggest hurdle to get over is often the family. Yes. They're not okay with it. So, like, literally you have families like, don't kill my family member. And she's like, oh, you're a barrier to get over.
Yes.
But then on the other hand, you have a story from not too long ago of a husband who basically murdered his wife with the doctor. And the wife didn't want to do maid.
Mrs. B.
But the husband said, well, I can't take care of you anymore, so... Like old Yeller behind the barn. I mean,
yeah.
So the families, you know, I guess it can go either way, but there's actually, I mean, can you tell us that story? What happened there?
Yeah. So I actually am writing about this one in the new book because Mrs. B's story is one of those warning signs for people. Dr. Ramona Coella, she's on the Ontario, she looks at the Ontario Coroner reports, but she's, you know, she's within the MAID Death Review Committee. Brilliant doctor. And she goes, there is a non-compliant list that we're looking at of over 400 people. Mrs. B was one of these ones, okay? Mrs. B had applied originally for MAID, but then made a decision that she no longer wanted it, okay? And instead of them saying, you know what, you're right, we get it, you've changed your mind, that's okay to make a different decision, she based it on her religion. She said, I've made a choice, I don't actually want to do this. Brilliant, love that for you, beautiful. And then what ended up happening is that she actually was mated the same day. They couldn't get her hospice in time. They couldn't get her palliative care because they've been defunding these places like the Delta Hospice. People have seen her talk about Angelina Ireland. They defunded her because she refused to do MAID at her facility.
Right. You talked about that last time.
Right. And so this is important because if we can't get a doctor's appointment, we can't get an orthodontist appointment, we can't get an eye doctor appointment, we can't even get into an ER same day.
Right.
Why is it that we're so quick to have access for these people to come in and assess her?
That's a great question.
And then kill her. And so she was killed same day, even though she revoked and pulled back her rights. So when people say, well, Quebec is doing this thing called advance requests. Okay. So say one of us, you and I, know we have the genetic component for Alzheimer's and we're like, you know what? I'm going to sign a document now. Okay. I'm going to sign it now so that when I'm 70 and I'm really like gone and I can't make the decisions for myself, just, you know, put me out to pasture kind of vibe. Right. Well, that happened in Europe. Okay. So that happened to a lady in Europe. It's actually the very first story I wrote about in the book because it's so important. She had made the choice, did an advance request, and this is what Quebec is doing now, okay? And in that advance request, she said she wanted MAID. Well, she went to the doctor, and the doctor put a sedative in her coffee and didn't tell her. And then they started the procedure with the family around. Well, this grandmother actually came to consciously mid-procedure, and the doctor had the audacity, and has been cleared, by the way, and said to the family, please hold her down while I finish. And the family held her down while they finished euthanizing her. So if you tell me that's not some form of murder, I don't know how I can have a very simple conversation with you about it. You know, right before I came here, you know, I made the mistake of engaging on Twitter. And I thought, well, Michael Malice is good at it. I wonder if I could be funny too. I can't. Turns out I'm not a funny person, in case you guys haven't noticed. And ironically, I'm sitting there and this person tags me in something and I started laughing and I was like, are you serious? It's the Toronto Raptors content creator.
Okay.
Just did a tweet about me calling me an idiot.
The like basketball team or?
Yeah, the NBA's Toronto Raptor content creator. It literally just went viral because it just got picked up. I didn't know this was going to happen, but he went at me saying that like, I'm uneducated and that this is fine and that we should be able to do this and all these things. And I actually went back at him. Anyway, it just got picked up. It's going completely viral. But the point is you're going to have people in the country where you live that are, because they've been so manipulated and slow dripped and told by doctor after doctor after doctor that this is the right thing to do to grandma, that they, again, he's the younger one and he had older people use it. And so now he's arguing with me on Twitter, not knowing who I am.
And it's being normalized. Yeah.
And it's being normalized.
Yeah.
So it's like trans, we got it normalized. And then we finally caught up. Trump caught up and was like, hey, we're going to stop it. But now this is their blind spot. This is Trump's blind spot. And this is obviously Mark Carney's blind spot because he needs the money. We need the money to go give it to Ukraine. We need the money to give it to the Indian people. We need the money to give it everywhere else but Canadians. So when people say, Kelsey, this is not actually happening, this isn't as bad as you think, I'm just early.
Yeah.
And so I need people to wrap their brain around 1 in 20 people. So if there's 20 people in this building right now, which there definitely is, one of those people is going to die by MAID, statistically.
That is astonishing. Yeah, 5% of the deaths are from MAID. And once it gets implemented, it's so much more difficult to ever extricate. So we need people now in America, like at least one person from every state needs to raise their hand and go, I'll handle it for Nevada. I'll handle it for Ohio, where you just keep your eye on the legislation. And when anything with MAID comes up, you got to go talk to your state house, because I guarantee the representatives in there, they aren't like excited to kill people, you know, as corrupt as a lot of them are, they're human beings. And, but if all they have is some very well put together professional, a doctor from Canada coming down and saying, look, this is how it's done. It's very simple and easy and wonderful. And there's no problems. Vote yes. And then leaves, you have to come in after and go, let me tell you what really happens once this is implemented. They only have the other side in their ears right now. We need to be the other people. You cannot.
Yeah, that's the guy right there.
Expect other people. Raptors Shaq.
I know. So I guess he's the content creator for the Toronto Raptors for the NBA. And I said, dude, this can't be good for you to be doing this. And then it got picked up by Urban Canada. It's getting picked up all over. And right before I came here, I went, oh no, the NBA is going to hate this.
That's wild. And okay, people say crap like this and still believe they're a good, okay, so you're a bad person.
I'm
for
a bad
this.
Person. And I'm also super incorrect.
It's one thing to be incorrect, another thing to be incorrect. Okay, so you're incorrect, cruel, and not a good person. Hold on, go back, guys. I want to read her tweet. We got to find out what makes her bad. So click on her tweet. You say, that person, if you understood the drugs, was paralyzed with lungs filled with fluid and drowned to death. Enjoy that reality.
I'm really harsh about it.
I mean, well, because it's a harsh thing. You're just describing what's actually happening.
I know, because I'm done. This is what happens when you change verbiage and you change language.
Yep.
And I'm done sugarcoating this. This is medical murder. This is giving up on your society. This is telling people they should quit and die. And then they should accept that killing grandma is the easy way out. We have the double blind. You can provide in hospice and palliative care a way so that patients are maybe given a little more morphine and they slowly slip with their loved ones there. Why are we scheduling this like it is an elective breast surgery?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to come down on people making these decisions, but when people come to me and say, Grandpa looked peaceful, he was so still and so peaceful, I said, because they paralyzed you first.
Yeah.
There's nothing peaceful about a paralytic.
I mean, the whole thing is, here's another stat that's pretty interesting that goes along to the point I was about to make.
Yeah.
I had to euthanize my dog about a month ago. It was like the hardest thing ever. And obviously it's all the more difficult because you can't communicate with them, but it's like, who are these people that are so cavalier about taking a human life? It was like torture to put down my dog who clearly, you know, it was time, obviously, but it's like the fact that they care less about humans than dogs. And by the way, in 2021, Nearly 10,000 Canadian people were euthanized. In 2021, a total of 9,842 Canadian people were euthanized. Only 2,000 shelter dogs in Canada were put down that year.
Yeah.
So five times as many human beings are euthanized in Canada as dogs, because there are no kill shelters. There are people that will.
Oh, there are. They're called Maid House. There's one in Victoria and one in Toronto. All they do is kill people. There's also Shoreline.
Oh, well, that's the opposite.
St. Paul's Hospital.
Well, but, you know, dogs at least have people advocating for them and saying, hey, we shouldn't euthanize dogs. Right. Where are the humans saying, let's not euthanize humans?
Well, and listen, so this was the argument. So I was really lucky. So Michael Malice called me and he goes, look, I think I need to talk about this publicly because I think it's important that people understand it. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're more people, I guess, like you better than me. And so, like, talk about it, please. So he actually went on Joe Rogan. He went on Rogan a couple weeks ago and he goes, you know, he was talking to him and he said, Joe, look, like, do you know about the MAID program? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, but Joe's response was, yeah, but what was wrong with her? Like, why did she need it? Because we don't want someone to suffer. And I agree with Joe. What was wrong where we needed to euthanize them? But where my line is our society cannot be trusted with this because it's euthanizing everybody.
Yeah.
This is not just grandma anymore. And it was funny because Malice pushed back and he goes, right, Joe, because do you remember when we started allowing people to wearing dresses and now we had to affirm their gender? Do you see where that goes?
Right.
Do you see where this goes?
Why can people not see the patterns and stop them before? It's like we're going to sit here. They're going to implement MAID. It's going to get really bad. And then people are going to realize and fight back. Why not fight back right now before it gets there?
And then I'm going to seem like a lunatic for saying, I told you so. And you didn't listen to the loud lady.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I have empathy and I agree with what Joe is saying. Nobody should suffer on the end of their life, but we should be giving palliative care and hospice. And right. Just for record, it's not, as Joe said, but we put dogs down. It's not the same. Actually, as putting dogs down, this was the clip here. It was not the same. We don't use pentobarbital. We do not use drugs that stop the heart right away. We use a cocktail that's never been studied, never been researched, all created by a doctor who was apparently used to deliver babies, but now had the audacity to create a protocol, sell it to Health Canada, and we can't see the IP.
Right.
So it's like, this is not, that's my pushback. It's like, Joe, but I hear you, but we don't euthanize the same way we kill dogs. And it's still killing. But like, again, there's a time and a place for an animal. I've had to put dogs down. It's the worst thing in the world, but it is not the same drugs. It's not the same protocol.
It's just not the same situation.
No.
Even in the slightest. I forgot to bring this up. I should have brought it up earlier. But the other thing is that like 95% of the people killed in Canada are white.
96 and 96. America's 95.
So, I think that's an aspect that maybe needs to be talked about too.
I mean, listen, apparently I can't talk about it because I'm white. So, but let's talk about it any really briefly. Right now, 96% of the individuals of the 100,000 that have utilized the medical murder program in Canada are white. In America, 95% are. Do we think that's a coincidence that India is now partnered and China is now partnered with Canada and they're looking at bringing in millions and millions and millions and millions of more? Because what we do know about those populations is they don't put people in nursing homes. Yeah. They don't kill grandma. Okay.
Right.
They actually let grandma die. And we brought my other half here last time and I said to him, please never put me in a nursing home. And he looked at me and he said, honey, I'm black and American. We don't do that.
Right.
We don't do
right.
that.
Right. But white people have been convinced.
White people have been convinced nursing homes is where they should go. And then that's where they slip in and convince them that it's easier to die.
It's so gross. Yeah. I mean, it's not like 95% of the people in Canada are white.
No.
It's massively an over-representation. Finally, an over-representation of white people that the powers are fine with. They're yeah. fine. There's no diversity in MAID. Maybe that could be a good move. Diversity in MAID. Get people to sign petitions to say we need to be killing more black and brown people.
Oh my God, I guess
I mean,
oh my God.
That's what MAID is, right? And if it's good for us, isn't it good for everybody? If not, maybe we need to rethink some things.
Harrison said it.
Hey, I'm making a point here. I think it's a good point. If it's such a good thing for white people, wouldn't it be good for everybody else? No, it's evil for everybody. And it has to stop for everybody. Kelsey Sheeran, thank you.
as InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet, up to 40% off store-wide, 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.